ATL Echo presents Tempus Gratiae by Charlotte Rea. Chapter 1. Hermione.
What time is it?
Hermione's voice was muffled behind the stack of books she was balancing in her arms. She had a hard time glancing over it, and without Harry's intervention she would have bumped into something twice already, one of the obstacles being Filch, who did have less sympathy for her than the Ravenclaw student before him. He'd threatened her with thumbscrews and scraping bubblegum from tables, while Harry had tried not to laugh. Filch had also been the reason why she'd lost track of time. 10 minutes to 8, Harry answered easily. He only carried 2 books, and they were in his bag. Are you sure you don't want me to take some of these? He was observing her efforts suspiciously.
Yes, I'm sure. I can drop them on my own, she groaned softly.
Then at least use a featherlight charm.
No, she gasped. Madam Pince checks the books for traces of magic and—
Another gasp, this time not from dismay.
And you would know that if you'd bother to borrow a book every once in a while.
Does she now? He mused. Hermione cut him an irritated glance.
Yes, Harry, she does. If students don't handle the books properly and repair them with magic, she, of course, wants to know.
He rolled his eyes.
Suit yourself.
Why do you even have to take back all of the books right now? At that, she rolled her eyes and sighed.
I wasn't finished working through them yesterday evening, and the waiting list for these books is so long I wouldn't have got them again before exams. And since I have to return them within 2 weeks after I borrowed them—
Hermione stopped and heaved the stack of books onto a windowsill opposite the double doors leading to the library. She took a deep breath and shook her arms.
I wouldn't have had enough time to return them after classes.
She then finished her sentence.
Now, it is exactly 13 days, 23 hours, and—
She grabbed Harry's wrist and studied the face of his watch.
58 minutes ago. So let's go, lest I have to pay the penalty charge.
Harry shook his head, turning around and entering the mighty Hall of Wisdom. Hermione had offered him to stay at breakfast, just like Ron, and meet her later at the classroom, but he'd insisted on accompanying her. And Hermione knew exactly why. He couldn't stand the glances anymore that Ginny cast him over her porridge. Hermione, however, wanted to spare herself from repeating the last evening. After all, it had been she who'd had to listen to Ginny's rant about Harry lacking empathy. That's why she had not, as planned, managed to return the books yesterday. Alas, she'd missed what he'd done wrong this time, and at this point, she didn't dare ask any more. With a loud smack, she finally dropped the books onto Madam Pince's counter and had to quickly grab the topmost to stop it from slipping. Nodding contentedly, she brushed her moist hands on her cloak and stepped aside so the librarian was able to see her.
"You are late," she promptly stated. "Wrong. Now it is exactly 13 days, 23 hours, and—"
Once again she grabbed Harry's wrist.
59 minutes since I borrowed these books. I'm totally meeting the 2-week limit," she finished with a pleased grin, even having the nerve to wriggle her eyebrows.
Madam Pince, however, looked as if she'd taken a bite out of a lemon. She glared at Hermione, then she fetched her wand and checked the books. Hermione cast Harry a triumphant glance. He rolled his eyes. And because she couldn't find any traces of magic on them, her expression got even sourer before she took the books as if they weighed almost nothing, and disappeared into the secret rooms behind her desk.
"Let's get out of here," Harry muttered, and tugged at Hermione's cloak.
But she pointed at the book another student had just placed on the counter.
"I've wanted to borrow this book for months."
Every thought of her class that was about to start in a few minutes paled for a second, and Hermione crowded the Slytherin with greedy eyes.
"Not now,"
Harry hissed, and yanked at her arm. She followed him, sulkily and very, very reluctantly, back into the corridors of the castle. If it had been any other subject than Defense Against the Dark Arts that was scheduled for their first lesson, she would have been tempted to risk being late. Professor Flitwick would have understood, and Professor McGonagall came a few minutes late to her first lesson most of the time anyway. Professor Sprout regularly lost students between her plats, and rumor had it that Professor Vector had given lessons to empty classrooms because she'd forgotten it was the weekend. Professor Snape, however? Harry cursed under his breath and suddenly broke into a run.
"What time is it?"
Hermione inquired breathlessly. She had difficulty keeping pace with him. 4 minutes to 8, he called back, and didn't sound labored in the slightest when he jumped down the last steps of the stairs. There he waited impatiently for her to catch up.
Come on!
I'm trying!
She tucked her school bag under her arm and sprinted alongside Harry through the corridors. What felt like an eternity later, their classmates came into view, and Hermione put her hands on her knees when she was finally allowed to stop.
Is he here yet?
Nope, Ron countered in a bored tone, leaning against the wall next to Neville, his book bag discarded on the floor. Harry breathed a sigh of relief and did the same. Hermione glided down the wall.
Utterly in vain, she whispered groggily.
Her knees were trembling.
Be glad we're not late, Harry huffed.
His breathing was only slightly heavier than in Bin's most boring lessons. When Hermione finally managed to get back onto her feet, she looked around the deserted hallway, frowning.
What time do we have now?
5 minutes later than the last time you asked, Harry mumbled, and Ron grinned.
Meaning?
She inquired, nevertheless. He glanced at his watch and arched his eyebrows in surprise.
3 minutes past 8. No way, Ron blurted. The bat's never late. Your watch has to be wrong.
It's not, Hermione objected. I cast a radio clock spell on it.
So he's really late?
Neville looked around, his eyes as huge as saucers.
So it seems, Harry mumbled.
Now he looked the corridor up and down as well.
Weird. No, no, Ron said,
his formerly flabbergasted expression changing into a grin that resembled Fred and George's so much that Hermione cocked an eyebrow.
That's not weird. That's absolutely wonderful.
And this opinion was shared by the whole class, to Hermione's silent disapproval. Hermione felt ashamed. Very much so. But at first, she couldn't really be sorry that Snape didn't turn up this Monday morning. After they'd been standing in the corridor for about 15 minutes, Professor Sinistra had come to them, ushered them into the classroom, and gone through a double lesson of theoretical astronomy with them. It had been so much more relaxing than their normal lesson with Snape would have been. But when he remained missing for the rest of the week, a bad feeling settled in her stomach, and curiosity. Especially curiosity.
"Professor Snape has to tie up a few loose ends in London,"
Harry repeated on Thursday evening what Dumbledore had told him at one of their private meetings, imitating his tone of voice so perfectly that even Hermione grinned.
"He will return soon."
"Pity," Ron sighed and pouted.
"That's all he said?" Hermione pressed.
"Yeah."
Harry shrugged and collapsed into the empty armchair in front of the fireplace.
"Something is odd about all of this,"
she mused, and chewed on her bottom lip.
"Professor Snape has never been absent, and if he had to go to London, why didn't anybody tell us at breakfast on Monday? Professor Sinistra was completely clueless."
She clicked her tongue.
"Nobody knew that he would be away. I'm absolutely positive."
"Maybe he decided to be a full-time Death Eater again and left Hogwarts," Harry mumbled grimly.
"Then Professor Dumbledore wouldn't say that he'll be back soon,"
Hermione reminded him.
"Are you sure? Maybe he thinks he can turn him back."
No, she wasn't sure, and so she kept silent. The whole affair was a riddle that, Hermione didn't dare say it in front of Harry and Ron, was as strange as it was interesting. And it got stranger and even more interesting when Snape returned to class, as usual, the following Monday. Nothing about him indicated that he'd been away at all. He appeared for their lesson on time, silenced them all with a glare, and let them in with a grim expression, he himself staying at the door to count them, probably hoping to catch a few of them being too late. Hermione, her nose once again stuck into a book, hastily put it in her bag, but she was still the last one to enter the classroom. She cast the dark man a glance while her cloak and her bag strap were slipping down her shoulder. First, he returned her look with the same disdain she was used to seeing with him. But just when she wanted to look away to not get on his bad side before the lesson had even started, something changed.
Hermione barely noticed it, the quick blink and subtle yank of his head, as if he'd just kept himself from staring at her. When she looked at him once again, unsure whether she'd only imagined it, he wore the same mask of indifference as ever.
"Are you planning to stand here all day, Miss Granger?" he snarled and arched an eyebrow.
"No, sir,"
she mumbled, and hurried to the last empty seat in the front row. Frowning, she pulled the chair from under the table and sat down.
"Chapters 4, 5, and 6," Snape proclaimed. "Read, summarize, utilize. You have 45 minutes."
A soft, a very soft murmur went through the class. Apparently, he'd set his mind on covering the topics of 2 weeks in one. But nobody could complain softly enough that Severus Snape wouldn't hear it.
"And if you don't start at once, you can add Chapter 7 as well," he added loudly. "Silence."
"He said that it doesn't concern me."
Invisible thunderclouds had gathered around Harry's head when he returned from his meeting with Dumbledore on Wednesday evening.
"Professor McGonagall told me the same," Hermione reported, disgruntled.
"But it does concern us," Ron objected. "We should know if Snape tries to kill you on you-know-whose order."
"Dumbledore also said," Harry continued, "that Snape doesn't pose a threat to me."
He rolled his eyes.
"Maybe that's true," Hermione mused.
"Because,"
Ron prompted her to continue, his eyebrows raised.
"Because Snape..."
She paused and bit her lip. All of this sounded weird, even in her head. Still, she raised her chin and began anew.
"Because Snape looked at me strangely when he let us into the classroom the other day."
For a second, neither Ron nor Harry said a word. Then the former barked a laugh and exchanged a glance with the latter.
"Hermione, it's Snape. He always looks strangely."
A crease formed on her forehead.
"Something that's always a certain way is not strange, but normal, Ron. And Snape definitely did not look at me normally."
"He must have imagined it. Why should the bat look at you strangely? It's Harry who's to defy you-know-who."
"I did not imagine it,"
Hermione insisted, and folded her arms over her chest.
"Even if he looked at you strangely," Harry interfered, "why should it mean that he hasn't returned to Voldemort's side?"
For a second, she pondered whether or not she should tell him that Snape had not looked at her strangely in that way, but Hermione swallowed the words.
"Maybe you're right,"
she mumbled instead, and turned her eyes to the cold fireplace. She shouldn't give so much weight to a fleeting glance from Snape, even if a part of her very badly wanted to.
"If you don't get lost at once, I will hex you into one of these books."
Hermione reluctantly raised her eyes from the book she was reading. Madame Pince was standing in front of her, her hands on her hips.
"You would never do that to your books," she countered.
"Do you want to risk it?" the librarian threatened.
"Even I know a few works that I think never should have been published."
Hermione ground her teeth together, but it was probably better to accept defeat this time. When she'd collected her stuff, though, she hurriedly fetched a book from the shelves that she'd stumbled upon earlier and went to the counter, only to wait patiently until Madame Pince, who'd already deemed herself the winner of their little duel, would notice her.
"What else?"
"I'd like to borrow this book. It sounds very fascinating."
She pushed the copy of The Suspicious Copulatory Behavior of Flopperworms across the counter and had to bite her tongue to not grin in view of Madame Pince's bewildered expression.
"Honestly, Madame Pince, I will miss you when my time here is up,"
Hermione said while she took the book and put it under her arm.
"Get lost,"
was the answer. Hermione shook her head, chuckling when the library doors slammed shut behind her. Madame Pince even made a show of locking them, the bolt sliding into place with a sharp clang. Hermione went to the windowsill opposite the doors and sorted through her things without haste. Glancing at the book again, she grinned. Maybe she really would take a look at it. Only when she was sure that it was past curfew, she slowly returned to the Gryffindor common room. She was in no rush to get there, and she hoped for an encounter on the way. If one was out for randomly meeting Severus Snape, then it was most promising to wait for curfew and still be outside of the common rooms. Hermione smirked to herself. Nervously. Maybe even a bit anxiously. But she smirked. She took several detours, talked to a few portraits, and stopped and waited every now and then to look out to the grounds through the blurry windows, even though her hands got clammier by the minute, and she shifted her weight from one leg to the other. Only about half an hour after curfew, she was lucky. Or she at least got what she wanted.
"Miss Granger."
Snape's voice sounded more pleased than reprimanding, while he strode straight towards her like an avenging angel.
"One ought to think a supposedly talented witch like you would be able to discern the onset of curfew on her watch."
"I am indeed, sir,"
Hermione replied politely, and gripped her bag tighter.
"And yet I meet you after curfew, in the corridors of the castle."
He stopped 2 steps away from her, his hands clasped behind his back.
"That I am generally able to discern the onset of curfew doesn't mean that I carry the respective tool with me. My watch is broken, sir."
Talking to him like this, her legs were quivering so hard that she was sure he could sense it through the floor.
"Do not pretend that you did not know that you should have long been in your common room," Snape growled,
but he got distracted by a horse that careered through one of the portraits next to them. He narrowed his eyes and observed the once again deserted landscape for a few seconds. Hermione, however, observed her teacher. His jaw was tense, a muscle beneath his eye twitched, his hair was greasier than normal, his face paler.
"Something is going to happen," she whispered,
and Snape's head jerked back to her.
"Nonsense," he hissed. 20 points from Gryffindor for roaming the castle after curfew. Now make yourself scarce."
Hermione tentatively stepped back, but the words Snape had said only belatedly reached her mind.
"Is it about Voldemort? It's the end of term. It would fit the pattern,"
she pondered out loud. Snape suddenly got very close to her.
"I suggest you stop following this train of thought. Go. Go to your tower, and don't leave it until dawn."
His urgent voice and the intense stare of these black eyes caused Hermione to surrender. She might be a lioness, but she also loved her life. So she whirled around and headed towards the stairs leading to the upper floor. But behind her, she thought she once again heard the voice of the potions master, and the words he said rang in her ears even after he killed the headmaster and fled the castle with the Death Eaters that night.
"Be safe, Hermione."
About a year later, she was sitting in an armchair at the Burrow and staring at the threadbare carpet lying on the cold planks. She was tired, exhausted, completely knackered, although she'd already slept 20 hours since it ended, for the first time in almost a year, in a real bed. With difficulty, she raised her eyes from the floor and looked out the window. The sun was just rising, a sharp, bright yellow disk behind the veil of mist. Hermione took a deep breath, then she exhaled slowly. The next moment, someone held out a cup over her shoulder, and she blinked repeatedly. Baffled, she glanced up the arm that belonged to the hand holding the cup and found Minerva McGonagall's face on its other end, no less tired than she was herself.
"Drink,"
she prompted her. Hermione's hand surfaced from the layers of blankets she'd wrapped herself in and took the tea.
"Thank you,"
she said hoarsely. She'd screamed so much in the battle, her voice hadn't recovered yet.
"Have you found him?"
she asked, referring to Professor Snape. Against her will, she saw him in the Shrieking Shack again, saw his blood slowly spread across the old wooden floor, and the fear open in his normally blank and cold eyes. She couldn't get rid of them, of these images of death and destruction. Minerva sighed.
"No, we haven't."
A hardly noticeable jerk went through the armchair when the newly appointed headmistress leaned her hip against it, now watching the sunrise as well.
"There are traces."
She stopped herself and dropped her eyes.
"But he is not there."
Hermione looked up at her, round-eyed.
"That's impossible," she breathed. "I saw him die. He has to be there."
Professor McGonagall shook her head.
"I'm afraid he's not, Hermione. A lot of time passed before we had time to go into the shack,
And some Death Eaters escaped. She let these two facts hover, even pinned her lips together, perhaps so she would not have to say the conclusion out loud. Hermione still heard it and gulped. A huge lump of something stuck in her throat and threatened to strangle her. Then she abruptly lowered her eyes and stared at the trembling surface of her tea. 1 year. Hermione slowly shook her head and skimmed through the pages of the little notebook. For 1 year, she had tried to figure out what had happened to Professor Snape. Not only after his death, but also during the week that he went missing in her sixth year. But to this day, 1 day before she would leave Hogwarts, graduating as one of the best students the castle had ever seen, she might have learned a lot about him that she hadn't known, but nothing about that. Still, she'd written down all the other bits and pieces, neatly, into the notebook that felt warm in her hand. She gently brushed over the leather cover which protected some of the secrets of Professor Severus Snape. Thinking about all the things Professor McGonagall and Professor Sprout had told her, Professor Dumbledore in his portrait, and Madame Pomfrey during the quiet hours in the infirmary. Even Madame Pince, if only after Hermione had promised to never step into the library ever again afterwards. All of these people had painted a totally different Severus Snape than she'd known. A man who had his very own sense of humor, who had helped when he'd been needed, and who made a show of his grimness like others of their badges. A man who preferred a cup of strong coffee over every tea, except if it had been prepared what he'd called properly. Professor Sprout had explained every single step to her. During the last of her school years, that Hermione had spent lonelier than ever since Harry and Ron had already started their apprenticeship in the ministry, she'd gotten to know Severus Snape. And now it was time to let him go.
"You were a man full of mysteries, sir, and apparently you will take a few of them to your grave. I have to accept that."
She brushed the cover of the book for the last time. Then she put it into a wooden case she'd transfigured out of a piece of driftwood for this exact purpose. She slid the lid on it and sealed it with a charm that would preserve this, for her, so important book for all eternity, especially from curious eyes. Nobody had to know about this. Then she hid the case deep down in her trunk. Eventually, there was a knock at her door.
"Yes?"
Hermione rose and straightened her dress.
"Are you ready?"
Ron's eyes got bigger when he saw her.
"Wow!"
Hermione smiled and bit the inside of her bottom lip. He'd come for her graduation feast. She hadn't seen him for weeks. Not only because he'd been eagerly involved in his apprenticeship, but especially because she'd been equally eager in trying to reveal the secrets of Severus Snape before her own set deadline. In vain. It was about time to return to her own life.
"Let's go, Ron."
She went to him and tucked her arm into his. Together they left the Gryffindor common room and went downstairs to the great hall. Hermione awoke with a tiny scream and was standing beside her armchair in a second. Her heart was racing, and she looked around frantically, her eyes wide open. Meanwhile, an at least equally horrified owl fluttered through her living room and only barely missed the ceiling lamp. Instead, it flew straight into the curtains and tumbled down until it landed behind the couch with a screech.
"Merlin!"
Hermione mumbled, and briefly closed her eyes, pressing a hand to her chest. From the open window, the first warm gust of spring blew into the room. She must have fallen asleep, although she'd only wanted to sit down for a moment after her tedious night shift at St. Mungo's. The open window was the reason why the owl had been able to enter the room to sit down on Hermione's head, which, in turn, had been the reason for her to startle awake from her nap. Another screech tore through the silence, and Hermione remembered that her feathered visitor had a problem. Her cheeks blushed, and, meandering through the armchair and the coffee table, she kneeled on the couch. Peering behind it, she frowned.
"I'm sorry,"
she said, and reached her hand down to the magical mail carrier, which promptly bit her pinky. Hermione pulled her hand back.
"Hey, no biting, or I'll leave you down there forever."
This threat clearly didn't please the owl,
but the conciliatory howling caused Hermione to assume that they'd wrapped up a deal. Once more, she reached down, and this time the owl let itself be grabbed and lifted up without objection. But it barely was on eye level with the windowsill when it struggled out of Hermione's grasp, dropped the parcel it was carrying, and disappeared as suddenly as it had appeared.
"I've got owl treats!"
Hermione apologetically called after it, but in vain. Sighing, she slumped back onto her feet and looked around guiltily. At least until her eyes found the parcel the owl had brought. It was clad in simple brown packing paper and wasn't marked with a sender. Curiously, she took it in her hands, turned and twisted it, and eventually loosened the cords that kept it closed. A simple book, clad in dark brown leather, emerged. Hermione knitted her brows. The vigilance of the war had faded more and more during the last 6 years, since there hadn't been any further attacks, not even from the escaped Death Eaters. The wizarding world was wrapped up in a golden haze of peace and trust. If this haze was to last, it was yet to be seen. In this case, however, she decided for a closer examination and fetched her wand. Only when all the usual evaluation charms turned out negative did she dare open the book, and was hit by a shock of a special kind. ETL Echo, echoing tales for everyone to love. ETL Echo presents Tempus Gratiae by Charlotte Rea. Chapter 2. Hermione. Not minding where it would go, Hermione threw everything she got hold of over her shoulder. Shoes, bags, clothes that had slipped off their hangers, more shoes, all of it landed haphazardly across her bedroom floor, until she finally found what she was looking for, a small wooden case she'd put in the backmost corner of her wardrobe when she'd moved in 3 years ago, so she wouldn't stumble over it again and again. Her pulse sped up when she slumped back against the wooden door. She canceled the charm protecting the case and ripped the lid off. The notebook she'd started in her 7th year was still in it, unscathed, as if she'd just put it in there yesterday. Hermione took it and struggled to her feet. Then she returned to the living room and sank onto her couch. Browsing through her own notes, her eyes kept darting to the book she'd received earlier, to Severus Snape's notebook. She'd instantly recognized the hand of her former teacher, even after all these years. But how could it be here now, addressed to her, to this address? Who might have sent her this book? Was it possible that Snape was still alive? She dismissed the last thought with a huff. Even if he was still alive, why should he send his notebook to her, of all people? Although there were only records of potion experiments in it, she was quite sure that he wouldn't ever give these away voluntarily. Hermione frenziedly skimmed through her notes. Then she tossed them aside and reached for Snape's book again. For 6 years, she'd more or less successfully managed to not think about the mysteries that shrouded this dark man. And now, all of a sudden, he was back.
"So, what is it?" Hermione mumbled. "Do you want me to solve this riddle or not?"
She pursed her lips, and then she decided that she hadn't got enough sleep during the last 48 hours to think clearly. This whole matter had waited 6 years. It could wait one more night. The next day, Hermione had a day off and used the time to return to her bed with breakfast and both of the notebooks to take a closer look at them. First, she skimmed through her own notes, because even though she would have thought she'd read them enough times to never forget any of them, she now had to admit that some details had slipped her mind. Then she returned to Snape's records, and soon she was lost in a world of potions. She excitedly read one page after the other, nibbled either on her toast or her bottom lip, and even took the book to the loo. She didn't get out of bed that day, and only when she had to switch on her light because it was nearing dusk outside, she stopped, solely because of a 2-words-long entry marked with the date of Snape's disappearing. Dol Brora. Hermione lowered the book, and all of the potions suddenly vanished from her mind. She stared at the ceiling and tried to tame her thoughts going head over heels. Dol Brora. She'd never heard of it. In the spur of the moment, she struggled out of her blanket and made herself presentable using her wand. Then she snatched Snape's book and apparated to the magical main library. 5 days later, Hermione had managed to take some days off work at short notice, packed a bag, and requested a portkey at the ministry that would take her directly to Scotland, to a small, drowsy, scattered settlement called Dol, in close vicinity to the village Brora. She didn't know what she was searching for, only that she could not search. The mysteriously appearing notebook caused her urge for answers to flare up more ardently than any details she'd found out about her potions professor and his disappearance during her last year at Hogwarts. Before she took the tatty feather to follow her curiosity, she scribbled a short letter for Ginny and called an owl from the main post office. At last, she sealed the windows, checked if the fireplace was closed, and made sure she hadn't left any easily perishable food in the kitchen. Just before 11, she was standing in front of her coffee table, her bag clasped in her hand, and stared at the feather that was supposed to take her to Scotland. This was pretty much the craziest thing she'd ever done, except for the Horcrux hunt. Traveling to Scotland just because of a notebook she had no idea who had sent it to her, to search for something without even knowing what it was? Her stomach tingled, and she took a last, deep breath. "I seriously hope this is neither a trap nor in vain," she mumbled. And yet she took the feather that instantly carried her off her feet. Dol was, well, scattered. Her eyebrows raised high up her forehead. Hermione looked over endlessly sprawling fields, and after she'd turned around herself once, she found that there was absolutely nothing to see. Only when she huffed in disappointment did she realize that such an insignificant spot of land probably wouldn't have a lot of places that would have been of interest for one Severus Snape, either. Huh. So she got going, looking for a place to spend the night. After she'd taken a closer look at the settlement, she found that there was only one bed and breakfast, at least only one that was labeled, respectively, with an almost illegible ironwork sign at the driveway leading to the small estate house. Elfin Cottage. It was built of stone and overgrown with wild ivy. The grey roof was green with moss, and the white varnish was coming off in flakes from the wooden window frames. She went to the door and knocked 3 times. For a long time, nothing happened, and she already saw herself sleeping on one of the acres under some trees. But then the door was opened, and she found herself face to face with a small, stooped muggle with sparse grey hair and thick horn rims. "Aye?" he asked hoarsely, and only hearing him say that one word, she could already make out his Scottish accent. Hermione smiled. "Hello," she began. I would like to know if you have a room available for me." She cut a quick glance over her shoulder, even though she didn't know what she was looking for. But the man eyed her a bit oddly.
"Costs £50 a night," was his curt answer.
Hermione gasped softly. For a drowsy village like this, that was quite a lot of money. Then she narrowed her eyes.
"Make it 30, and I'll stay for 3 nights.
The man followed suit and eyed her appraisingly.
40. 35.
A few seconds passed by silently. Then he jerked his head in what seemed to be a Scottish way of approval and stepped aside. Hermione went past him and looked around curiously. The walls were covered with a large number of family pictures, the floor with a thick carpet, and only a few steps behind the front door, a narrow staircase led up to the upper floor.
"We've only got 2 rooms, bath and bay." He curled his lips. "You can well yin, ma'am."
Since Hermione needed a moment to sort out what he'd said. 2 rooms and she could do what? He was absolutely doing this on purpose, judging by the catty smile playing around his thin lips. The first thing she answered was,
"I'm not a ma'am."
He bobbed his head indifferently.
"And I'm taking the right one." "Aye, 'tis the weir one. My good wife is currently out in a boat. She'll make it doon after. So long you can lay your baggage here and take a kick around the village."
He pointed at the niche next to the door. Hermione, smiling despite herself because she did like his way of speaking, actually understood enough to get what he said, and was amused by how he was throwing her out. She stowed her bag away where he'd told her to, and returned to the door.
"What's your name?"
the old man asked when she'd just opened the door.
"Hermione Granger. Yours?"
"Carl McCollum. The room's done at 2:00.
"Great, thank you,"
she replied politely, and returned to the warmth of spring. Hermione made good use of the time until the early afternoon to get an overview of the village. The coast was close. A fresh, salty wind was tugging on her locks. It could only be a few kilometers away. If she sussed the riddle out in time, she would perhaps do a slight detour there before she returned home. But for now, she limited herself to the few streets crossing through the acres like the lines of a children's drawing. Hermione was glad that Dol wasn't larger. She was busy enough taking a look at everything as it was. She relished being outside, though, having a look at the scattered farms. Her job normally didn't leave her with enough spare time to just go for a walk. And this scenery was really worth it. Almost all of the houses were built of gray stone and sank in green. There was something magical about this place, something that had nothing to do with the kind of magic that was circulating through her body. But there was one place in this village that emitted real magic, an old church. Located a bit elevated at the edge of the village, it got Hermione's hackles up even before she was aware of the building. Now, she was heading there determinedly and looked around, frowning. At the large double-leaf doors, she found a sign. "Danger of collapse. Do not enter." Hermione stepped back and circled the church. When at one point the magical energy got so strong that her hands tingled so badly she could hardly keep herself from casting some random spells, she drew her wand and gulped. Then she clicked her tongue and waded further around the building through tall grass, wild bushes, and low-growing trees. About 15 minutes later, she arrived back at the entrance of the church and had found nothing that she hadn't already known. She had to take a look around the inside of this decaying house of God.
"Alohomora,"
she whispered, her wand pointed at the lock of the doors, and heard a scraping sound. She pulled at the wrought iron ring, and the door opened slowly, creaking dreadfully. Casting a last glance over her shoulder, making sure nobody was watching her, she slipped inside the church. In comparison to the pleasant temperatures outside, the inside of the church was as cold as a fridge. Her eyes needed a second to get used to the twilight. Then she could make out the wide aisle and the rotting benches on each side, and at the end of the aisle, an oval, shimmering surface, approximately as high as she was tall, which was, without a doubt, the source of the magic. Hermione gulped. There was debris everywhere, and when she looked up, she could see the bright blue sky through some gaping holes. The danger of collapse apparently had not been a subterfuge. She carefully moved forwards, following the increasing magic making her hair stand on end, treading warily, listening to every sound permeating the silence surrounding her. Distance of a few feet, she eventually circled the odd phenomenon, her heart pounding heavily. And yet, she bit her lip and didn't even try to hide her smile. She'd missed this. Not Voldemort or the Death Eaters, but the thrill of secrets, of magical objects that were more than a Lumos here and an Alohomora there. That was even more than the potions and charms she was saving lives at St. Mungo's with every day. She'd missed more. And this was more. And above all, it was a more that didn't seem to be imminently dangerous. And if it was what she suspected that it was, then it wasn't dangerous at all. At least, not in and of itself. Her lips pursed. She finally stopped right in front of the shimmering surface and put her hands on her hips. She had to do some research. Had to check whether or not she was right with her guess. She wouldn't be so stupid to touch an obscure object without analyzing it first. Still, she couldn't leave this place without giving her theory at least a small try. Gnawing at her lip, she took a stone from the floor, looked at the shimmering oval first, and at her hand second, before she eventually threw the stone right into it. It disappeared. And Hermione grinned.
100 points for the nerd from Gryffindor,
she mumbled to herself and backed away. For now. If it wasn't this that had been of interest to Professor Snape, Then she didn't know what was. It was past 4 o'clock in the afternoon when Hermione returned to the bed and breakfast. She made sure her wand was thoroughly hidden and knocked. This time, it didn't even take 10 seconds before the door was opened enthusiastically. Hermione stepped back in surprise. A portly woman with gray curly hair and weather-beaten skin beamed at her. She reminded Hermione vaguely of Molly Weasley.
"Ye have to be Miss Granger," she said, and gestured for Hermione to come in. "My husband already told me about you, but he's so sparing with words, that stubborn git. He doesn't tell enough to get an idea. Ugh, I'm sorry. I'm so rude. I'm Ailey."
Hermione concentrated hard on what she was saying, and even though she could tell Ailey was making an effort to speak as clearly as possible, Hermione still had a hard time catching it all. When she'd finished, Hermione nodded.
"Oh, hello. I'm Hermione."
"Hermione."
The woman let her name roll over her tongue as only the Scots could do it.
"Hermione Granger,"
she repeated and frowned. Then she shook her head.
"A bonny name. Pure, tough, and profound. Do you fancy a cuppa, Hermione?"
She didn't even have time to acquiesce. Plus, she'd planned to decline. She had to send an owl to London, desperately needing books about rifts in time. Her stomach tingled when she first dared to think about her discovery so frankly. A rift in time. That's what she'd found. Probably. She needed to check that. But the owl had to wait, since now Ailey guided her across the little house into the kitchen and made her sit down on one of the old wooden chairs so insistently that Hermione couldn't help but do it. She sighed faintly.
"I'm so glad to have an acquaint like ye here for a change. Kyle doesn't like the young folk, but I keep saying, Kyle, I say, without young folk visiting dull and getting to ken us, we'll just disappear one day, and that would be a pity, right?"
Ailey put a cup down in front of Hermione and poured herself another one before she sat down opposite her.
"Say, what brings ye here, Hermione?"
Hermione, who had just taken a sip from her tea, almost choked on it. She gave an embarrassed little cough and cleared her throat.
Holiday.
She smiled tentatively. "I wanted to get out, get a breath of fresh air, clear my mind,
reflect."
She dragged out the last word, hoping Ailey would get the broad hint and let her go. But she didn't.
"Barry idea. Kyle can show you some canny areas. Kyle!"
She called for her husband in such a loud voice that Hermione flinched. And when he didn't respond after a solid 3 seconds, Hermione was surprised Ailey had even waited for so long. She just kept talking a mile a minute.
"As much as I would enjoy hearing more of your family," Hermione said about 2 hours later, and pushed a stack of baby photos of Ailey's children across the tabletop. "I really need to go to bed now. The stroll earlier tired me. The fresh air, you know."
She peered at the face of the clock hanging on the wall behind Ailey. It wasn't even 6:30, but she certainly was tired. She doubted the fresh air was to blame, though.
"Of course. If you aren't used to living in the countryside, the fresh air's exhausting."
Ailey smiled and nodded sympathetically.
"Get some rest, Hermione. And the morrow?"
She faltered. Her face lit up.
"Hermione Granger, of course."
She looked over at Hermione round-eyed. Hermione tilted her head in confusion.
"Hold your horses a second."
Ailey rose to her feet and scurried out of the kitchen so swiftly Hermione looked after her in surprise. Then, however, she sighed, mainly out of relief. For a solid 10 seconds, the silence was soothing her ears. She massaged her temples and wondered whether she'd packed a headache relief potion, or at least some aspirin. Maybe she still had an old blister in the inside pocket of her bag. Were Snape's secrets really worth this? Why hadn't she just borrowed Arthur's tent and camped out instead of booking a room in a bed and breakfast? And why was she only thinking about that option now? She hadn't found an answer to her questions when Ailey's return snapped her out of her musings.
"I know I've heard your name before."
She balanced a stack of books on her arms that she now carefully put down on the table.
"'Twas about 7 years ago,"
she explained, and wiped her dusty hands on the apron she'd tied around her hips.
"An eerie, Jimmy. I was glad Carl was here."
"An eerie what?" Hermione inquired, when Ailey, for the first time in 2 hours, wasn't going on chattering, but apparently got lost in her memories.
"A man," Ailey clarified.
"An eerie man?" Hermione echoed, dumbfounded.
"Aye, gay eerie, clad in black. And the een—"
She let her finger circle in front of her eyes and clicked her tongue.
"He luckily didn't abide long. Just brought the books here and said I should give 'em to Hermione Granger when she turns up here."
Hermione's eyes grew wide.
"He mentioned my name?" "Aye, aye. Dinna you ken him?"
"I do," Hermione mumbled. "Yes, I think I know him." She was silent for a second, now lost in her memories herself. Then she returned to the here and now.
"Why didn't you give these to me earlier?" "I forgot. I knew your name had a ring to me, but I just couldn't mind where to put it. 7 years is a long time. We've already thought about just binning them. It's a strange topic, glaciology in the Antarctic."
Yeah. Hermione mumbled and rubbed her forehead, her gaze roving across the books. And yet she was smiling because of the way Ailey pronounced the word glaciology. But the moment faded, and the books snapped back into focus. They were lying on the table, their edge pointing towards her, the uppermost so old that the title had become illegible. But Hermione was still sure that they had absolutely nothing to do with glaciology in the Antarctic.
"Do you deal with it?" Ailey inquired, curiously. "Has this Jimmy been a colleague of yours? But how come didn't he give you the books hisself? Is this some kind of paper chase?"
"Some kind—" "Yes," Hermione stammered. What else was she supposed to say? She decided to end this now.
"Thank you for storing the books. I'd like to retreat to my room now." "Oh, aye, of course. They'll want me to call you when tea is done."
Hermione shook her head, already rising to her feet and taking the books.
"No, that will not be necessary. Have a good night, Ailey. And to your husband, too."
She didn't wait for her reply, but climbed up the stairs with her unexpected gain. Her bag was standing in front of one of the four doors, and Hermione supposed that behind it was the room that had been prepared for her. She first brought in the books, then she fetched her bag. When she placed it in front of the wardrobe, she noticed the burning marks on the clasps, and shaking her head, she huffed. Apparently, one of them had tried to take a look at her things and had been surprised by her protecting charms. Served them right. But the hint of malicious glee faded quickly, and curiosity got the better of her. She browsed her bag for something to soothe her headache and actually found an old blister of aspirin. Hermione squeezed one of the tablets into her hand and sniffed at it skeptically. Aspirin formed acetic acid when it got old, but she couldn't smell anything. Well, it would have to do. While Hermione waited for the aspirin to take effect, she returned to the books.
"So you do want me to solve your riddle, Professor Snape?" she ascertained, after she'd skimmed the titles.
Contrary to Ailey's words, every single one of these books dealt with the theory of time rifts. Hermione did not sleep a single second that night. After her headache had faded, she read through all of the books. She virtually inhaled them. And when the morning dawned in front of the windows, she struggled out of the bed she'd made herself comfortable in and refreshed herself quickly. She pocketed one of the books, a rather thin, more practically oriented one. Then she sneaked down the stairs and left the house before Ailey got another chance to hog her. Breakfast wasn't worth it. But she was still hungry, so she apparated to Brora first thing to buy 2 buns and a cup of coffee at a bakery. Then she returned to the old church. Today, she'd done her research. Today, she would get closer to solving this mystery. Today, she would not leave again without gaining more information. Undetected by nosy eyes, she slipped into the old building and brushed the dust trickling down the ceiling of her hair. So early in the morning, the sun was shining through some of the still unscathed stained-glass windows and painted a colorful pattern of light onto the decayed interior of the church. Reaching the altar, Hermione put down her bag and took the book. She kneeled down in front of the rift, armed with her wand and the reference text, and experimented with some spells she'd found in the book, taking a bite out of her bun every now and then.
About half an hour later, she slumped back onto her feet, round-eyed, and blew a strand of hair from her face.
"Astonishing,"
she mumbled. This rift in time was, as it seemed, stable. It already existed for quite a while, and had been crossed several times. The possibility that Snape had undertaken a little time travel during his disappearance in her sixth year was, considering all she knew and had learned by now, not that unlikely. And apart from that, the spells had told her that the rift was still carrying enough energy to stay open for years to come. Hermione wondered whether the church had been closed by the Muggles or the Ministry. But as unprotected as it was, without any magical wards, without alarms, without anything that kept the church from being entered, she supposed that the Ministry wasn't aware of this rift. And if the books Snape had left for her were right, then Muggles weren't able to see it. Maybe there had been cases of missing persons that had been traced back to this church. Or maybe they'd just noticed the magic and abandoned the church because of that. Hermione knew that her parents always felt uneasy being close to magical locations. They'd always been reluctant to accompany her to Diagon Alley, and had been glad when Hermione had gone there with the Weasleys. But there was one thing her spells couldn't tell her. Where this rift led. It had developed due to two powerful magical happenings in time. They had attracted each other, like the poles of a magnet, and had been strong enough to coil up the line of time into a loop. Where it crossed itself, the rift had opened. One could use it like a door. Hermione was convinced that the occurrence that had opened it at her end had been Voldemort's death, maybe in combination with Dumbledore's death and the destruction of the Horcruxes. All of that might have been in the past for some years now, but what was a few years, considering eternity? The rift had to extend over about 50 years surrounding the war, probably even more. But in the past, there were several occurrences of magical importance she would trust to have enough power to create this loop. And there was only one way to find the answer. She would have to go and see for herself. Hermione used the remaining days that she'd paid for in the bed and breakfast to further educate herself on the theory of timelines, time rifts, and time travel, and to inconspicuously question Ailey about the church.
"Och, denne gang there," was the answer, accompanied by a shudder. "It's uncanny up there. No one's gone up there for at least 20 years. If you're interested in churches, there's one down in the village you can visit. But then a gang to the old kirk."
Hermione had let it go at that. Apparently she'd been right with her assumption that the Ministry didn't know anything about this rift. And if she really wanted to pass through it, it better stay that way. But that was the big question, right? Did she want to go through that rift? Snape had led her here. It seemed like he wanted her to do it. But why? What had he found on the other side that he'd led her here? And why her, of all people? Why not Harry? Should she really trust Snape that much? Blindly? Even beyond death? Well, for the time being, she decided to take more time. She asked at St. Mungo's for more days off. That she was granted. She had some unused holidays from the last years to spare, anyway. And informed Harry and Ginny that she would stay in Scotland for longer. And then she simply pretended to be a tourist until, 4 days after her arrival, she packed her bag and left the cottage, waving Ailey goodbye. As soon as she was out of eyesight, though, she disappeared into the bushes and apparated straight into the church. Hermione gulped when she was standing in front of the rift again, and noticed that she'd worried her brain unnecessarily during the last few days. It was obvious. Of course she would go through the rift. How could she not? She was a Gryffindor, and she couldn't solve one riddle and ignore the next. Snape had wanted her to find the rift, not only to look at it and analyze it. He could have done so himself. No, he wanted her to go through it. And since Snape had always wanted to help them, although they'd learned that much too late, he would have had his reasons to lead her here. Hermione sighed. After they'd all wronged him so badly, she felt like she owed him.
"So, you want me to go?" she mumbled. "Then I will go, Professor. Don't let me regret it."
Hermione raised her chin, took a deep breath, and grasped her wand and her bag tighter. Her fingers were cold, damp, and maybe they trembled a little. Still, she got going and managed to get her legs into a strange automatism.
Even if she would have wanted to stop, at one point she couldn't have done so anymore. The flickering surface of the rift came closer, and only at the very last moment she squinched her eyes shut, and a small whimper escaped her lips. She was scared, thoroughly scared of what would happen now. She expected pain, dizziness, nausea, and felt nothing. After about 10 steps, Hermione stopped. For a moment, she didn't dare open her eyes. Instead, she wondered if it had worked, or if she was still in the church, only standing on the other side of the rift. She heard birdsong, but they had been there earlier as well. Only belatedly, she noticed that the ground underneath her feet felt different. And then she blinked, looked around, and uttered a faint, "Huh!" For she was standing in the middle of a forest. "I would say, don't be scared." Hermione almost jumped out of her skin, and dropping her bag, she whirled around. Her eyes roved over the trees until they fastened on a woman that was sitting underneath the trees, leaning against a trunk, petting the shell of a tortoise that was resting in her lap. "But that's kind of pointless if you're approached from behind." She shrugged her shoulders. "It was worth a try, though." Hermione stumbled a step back. "Who are you?" she asked, and kept looking around. She really was in a forest. Her trainer sank a bit into the soft ground, and flocks of chirping birds were surrounding her. The wind rustled in the dense leafage, and only a few rays of sunlight found their way down to her. Such a forest, so densely vegetated, so lively, so overwhelming, she'd never seen before. "And where am I?" "Or more precisely, when?" she quietly added. "I think it quite impolite to not introduce yourself before starting to question me, since you're the guest here," the foreign woman began, and clumsily rose to her feet before she came over to Hermione. "But I don't want it to be awkward. I am Wendolyn, and this is Saoirse." She pointed at the tortoise that was just withdrawing its head. Hermione's eyebrows twitched. "Pleased to meet you, I guess. So, do you mind telling me what your name is?"
No. I'm Hermione."
"Nice to meet you, Hermione."
"This, might sound a little weird, but what year is it?"
A branch cracked underneath her feet, and Hermione flinched.
"That doesn't sound weird at all. I mean, you just emerged from a time rift. That can leave you a bit confused."
Wendolyn gave her a friendly smile.
"Indeed."
And it got worse by the second. Did she really come across another witch? Was she really that lucky?
"The year is 1486 after Christ."
"Wow, we're 4-digit, Hermione mumbled. And when Wendolyn didn't seem overly confused by her remark, she added,
"Am I right in assuming that you are a..."
She choked on the end of her question.
"Witch?"
"I prefer the term magically gifted, but yes, I am." Wendolyn wrinkled her nose.
"And are you from another time as well?"
"Maybe," she grinned mischievously. "But now it's your turn. What are you doing here?" She bobbed her head, indicating to Hermione that she should follow her. Hermione hesitated and glanced back at the rift.
"Oh, don't worry, it's stable. I've observed it for quite some time now."
She looked at Wendolyn.
"What do you mean by quite some time?"
"That's a matter of perspective. So, will you come with me, or do you want to go back?"
"No, I mean, I'll come," Hermione replied quickly. "But did somebody else come through the rift before me?"
"Not as far as I know, but I don't usually sit here every day to watch the rift, so..." Hermione nodded absent-mindedly. Assuming that she'd really come through the rift first, at least on this side of it, that would mean that Snape was still about to come? She frowned. Was it possible that the rift was not subjected to the rules of time? That in it, time didn't move forward linearly, but chaotically? That one could go through later on one side but come out earlier on the other? Or did that mean that Snape... that he had never been here? A chill ran down her spine. She had to check this out. Nothing in the books had suggested that she could get here before Snape, but maybe she'd just read past it. She had been tired. She would investigate the rift, explore it. The spells she had used on the other side of the rift would work here as well.
"Will you come now?" Gwendolyn's voice cut through her thoughts. "Or will you immediately go back after all?" She tilted her head while she watched Hermione. She blinked. Actually, she thought, she had nothing to lose. The rift was stable. Gwendolyn and her tortoise didn't seem particularly dangerous. And this time period was more than fascinating, even though witches might not have had the best reputations here. But she'd learned to lie low, with each summer that she'd spent with her parents. And apart from that, she wanted to solve this riddle. More than everything else in the world, she wanted to know how all of this—Snape disappearing in her sixth year, his notebook and all of the other hints, the rift in time—were connected. She couldn't go back now and pretend as if she'd never found out any of it. So she smiled for the first time since she'd arrived at this time. "Yes, I'll come with you." She took her bag and followed Gwendolyn across the mossy ground.
ETL Echo. Echoing tales for everyone to love. ETL Echo presents Tempus Gratiae by Charlotte Rea.
Chapter 3. Severus. The knocking at his door was as aggravating as the buzzing of a midge right before falling asleep. Severus stared at the dark wood, as if his glare could stop it, digging his fingernails into the armrests of his chair so hard that he could hear the old fabric crack. He knew who was standing on the other side of the door. It was Dumbledore. Dumbledore, whose office he'd left earlier, absolutely furious because the old man had once again cloaked himself in silence. Dumbledore, who still had wanted to draw another promise from him. Dumbledore, who was the last person Severus wanted to talk to right now. That didn't stop the headmaster from trying, though. At this point, he was already knocking on his door for about 5 minutes. 5 endless minutes. But astonishingly enough, he didn't resort to magic to get what he wanted, and eventually he left. Severus's fingers slackened. He held his breath and closed his eyes for a second. Against his will, their encounter earlier that evening emerged from his memory.
"Promise me that you will do it, Severus. When the time has come, you have to do it."
His stomach lurched, only thinking about what Dumbledore, what both of his lords expected him to do. He imagined, only hypothetically, how he would raise his wand against the headmaster and— He laughed, throatily. The idea alone was so ridiculous that he could lose his mind over it. In fact, it was already happening. Every time he acted as if nothing was wrong, he lost a small bit of his mind. When he was teaching, sitting next to his colleagues in the Great Hall, talking with them, drinking his coffee in the staff room, discussing plans for the next term at staff meetings. Then, he could almost forget that the only relevant plan for the next term was Dumbledore's death and his own promotion as headmaster. When he wasn't seeing Dumbledore's black hand, it almost felt as if all of this had only been a bad dream. And then there were days like this, when he couldn't think of anything else, when he would have given everything to— everything, to be able to talk to only one person who didn't expect him to do that, who had enough trust in Severus to tell him what was happening behind the scenes, why he had to do this, why there wasn't another way. But nobody could answer his questions, except for Dumbledore. And Dumbledore was the last person Severus wanted to talk to right now. At long last, he rose to his feet and fetched his traveling cloak. Rashly, spontaneously. It was late in the evening, way after curfew. The castle was as quiet as a monastery or a church. The portrait residents had retreated behind their frames to sleep. The armors were silent. Peeves was clever enough not to cross Severus's path. The buzzing in his veins ceased a little when he descended the stairs of the castle's entry, a warm breeze brushing his face. Summer was coming. He could smell it. Severus strode along the black lake. The surface was rippling, almost as if invisible threads were pulling the water up. The reeds were whispering and rustling, and in the middle of the lake, silhouetted against the sparse light of the moon, the tentacles of the giant squid were moving. Soon the border of the castle grounds came into view, and Severus drew his wand before he'd even reached it. His face dogged and hard,
He opened a crack in the protecting charms and left the grounds. Hogwarts was like a maximum security unit, and yet the Death Eaters would eventually crash it. He quickly glanced back before he disapparated. Dol was a piece of land that had missed most of the last century's progress. If it were possible, the residents would probably tip up the few pavements they had at night. Nobody got in his way, nor did he have to change his looks, nor had to mind the power of his wand. The sounds of his steps echoed in the night. He turned up his collar against the drizzle. Then he saw the church, a huge black shadow enthroned on a hill on the outskirts of the village. Severus remembered the dull chiming of the church clock, vibrating in his body like a shiver in winter.
"This is the voice of the Lord,"
his grandmother had said, urging his 5-year-old self forwards. And although Severus had known about his magical heritage even back then, he had been afraid of this Lord. Now he suddenly longed for him, for a Lord that didn't expect him to kill someone, whom he could turn to without wearing either of his masks. Who would, if he could trust the words of his late grandmother, always listen to him, no matter what he needed to talk about. Severus was by no means a religious man, but he was a desperate man, and when he'd been here for the last time, that had been different. On this night, with no one to confide in, he maybe hoped to get some of his old confidence back, even if he had to find it in his childhood church. But apparently, the residents of Dol had found another way to the Lord since he'd last been here. There was a warning sign nailed at the doors. He could see it even when he was still well away from it. "Danger of collapse," it read, and it already looked quite old. He frowned. Why would they only tack a sign at a building in danger of collapse instead of knocking it down? Then he sensed the magic. It seeped through every crack of the walls.
"What the hell?" he mumbled, and sneaked closer.
His eyes closed. He laid his hand flush against the stones. There it was again, that vibrating. This time completely without the chiming, but it felt as if it would shake every molecule in his body out of its place. He took a deep breath. When Severus withdrew his hand, he slid his wand into it and unlocked the folding doors. The lock opened with a creaking sound, and without thinking twice, he pulled at the old iron ring until the rusty hinges squeaked. With another twitch of his wand, Severus sent some lights into the church, and instantly he found the source of the magic. A shimmering oval near the altar. He tilted his head to the left, then to the right, narrowed his eyes, and slowly approached it, crossing the nave. The benches to his left and right were assembled so neatly as if a mass was about to start soon. Only the thin layer of dust covering everything reminded him that nobody had been here for quite some time. Only when he'd already half-walked down the aisle did he understand what that oval was, and he froze on the spot. He'd read about it, in his youth, before he'd joined the Death Eaters and crashed his life into a brick wall. Rifts in time. He held his breath, his eyes fixed on the shimmering oval. Was that really possible? Slowly, he went closer and observed the time portal that had opened in this drowsy village in the middle of nowhere, because two extremely powerful magical events had coiled the line of time into a loop. He'd never seen anything like this, hadn't even dreamt of ever getting that opportunity. It was a much too rare occurrence. As far as he knew, it had happened only twice since humans were able to deliver something reliable to posterity. That this rift existed meant that something huge was about to happen. There wasn't a sufficiently powerful magical occurrence in the closer past, so it had to be in the near future. And since rifts in time used to stretch some years, if not decades, past the actual event, both into the past and the future, the existence of this rift was like a prophecy. Something huge was about to happen. That left the question of whether this huge event would be Dumbledore's death, or the death of the Dark Lord. Or both. All of this made breathing difficult for him, so he pushed it away and stopped about 3 feet in front of the rift, taking a deep breath. The magic that was pouring into his lungs caused a tingling in his whole body. It caused one thought to creep back upon him. Whatever would happen in this war,
It would truly unleash enough magic to build a loop in time. Here, of all places. In a goddamn church, in a goddamn village, somewhere in Scotland. Severus scoffed. He was snapped out of his thoughts when there was a bang behind him. He whirled around and tried to see what had happened, but after he'd stared into the shimmering light of the rift, he was virtually blind to the dimness of the church. White dots were dancing in his field of vision. The bang, however, was followed by a loud scraping, and the smell of dry dust tickled his nostrils. Severus raised his eyes to the painted ceiling of the church, just when a huge chunk of the roof loosened and fell down on him. Something was squawking next to his ear. Once, twice, then it got quiet. Until it suddenly screeched so loudly, and at such a high frequency, that Severus shot up. From the corner of his eye, he noticed a bird flapping away in shock. It disappeared between the billowing treetops.
"What the hell?"
he muttered again, and frowned. Only when a warm gust of wind brushed some strands of hair into his face, and the rushing of the trees grew louder, did he understand what his eyes were seeing. Trees. A lot of trees. There definitely hadn't been trees in the church in Dol. Severus was back on his feet within a second, his wand clasped in his hand. He pivoted on the spot, and only stopped when he saw the shimmering rift in front of him. He must have stumbled through it when he'd tried to escape the chunk of the actually in danger of collapsing roof, and the rift had led him straight into a green paradise. Severus gulped, and since there didn't seem to be any kind of danger right now, aside from cheeky birds, he relaxed a bit and tilted his head back. Was there still a forest with such dense treetops anywhere in Great Britain in his time? So thickly leaved that not a single ray of sunlight reached the ground? He thought not. Severus closed his eyes and took a deep breath. Then he looked back at the rift. He should go back, as soon as possible. He didn't belong here, and he had a mission to accomplish on the other side. Even now he had to hope that he would at least roughly return to the same time that he'd come from, given the time rifts were chaos and followed not a single one of the usual rules. It was absolutely possible that it would throw him out 20 years earlier than he'd left, or later. And it didn't bear contemplating what would happen if the Dark Lord believed Severus had betrayed him. But he did not go back. Instead of taking a step forwards through the rift, he took one backwards, then one more, and another. If he had to hope to return to the right time anyway, he could just as well stay, for a while. As soon as the rift had vanished from Severus's field of vision, he tended to his clothes. He didn't know in what time he'd arrived, but considering the flora surrounding him, it could very well be assumed that he'd traveled to the past. So he transfigured his cloak into a plain jacket, reluctantly gave up the deep black, and turned the sturdy, delicately woven fabric to loose linen. When he was done, he looked down at himself with furrowed brows. It would have to do, and probably wouldn't instantly attract attention, but he wasn't comfortable in the slightest in this new attire. Oh well. He got going again. There was only one path leading away from the spot where the rift in time was, and Severus followed it. The forest surrounding him was so dense, the ground so uneven, and everything so overgrown with bushes that he really couldn't do anything else. It was a wall of green that encompassed him, something that he most likely wouldn't find in his time anywhere outside of the deepest rainforests. He even came across plants that had gone extinct in his time, or that were so rare that you had to pay horrendous prices for them. Here, they grew tightly packed in areas as huge as the Black Lake. He'd been on the way for approximately half an hour, when the forest around the path grew a little lighter. The trees were far enough apart from each other that he could see more than the next few meters. There were small patches of sunlight overgrown with hedge violets, and finally, across a particularly huge clearing right in front of him, he spotted a small house, nestled in between two enormous trunks. Severus stopped. For several minutes he let the clear air flow through his lungs, and took his time to think things through.
The two options he had were playing ping-pong between his ears. Leave or stay. Stay or leave. Before he'd come to a conclusion, a woman stepped out of the cottage. She carried a wicker basket underneath her arm, ecru-colored fabric piled in it, and went to a cluster of trees between which thin ropes were stretched. She nimbly threw the pieces of clothing over the ropes, her skirt flapping in the wind. Severus narrowed his eyes and watched her, his gaze roving over her curly brown hair, the lean back, and her slender arms, contemplating whether he should dare go to her. Was it really wise to make contact with somebody from this time? He had to be careful. His musings, however, stopped instantly when the woman turned around, and he recognized her. He took a sharp breath and stumbled back. A branch cracked underneath his right foot, and the woman raised her eyes. She saw him at once, and smiled.
"I was waiting for you," said Hermione Granger, and put her hands on her hips.
"Miss Granger?" he asked in astonishment, when she'd come closer.
"The one and only," she confirmed with a nod.
He narrowed his eyes, gripping his wand tighter.
"Prove it," he hissed.
She chuckled.
"In my second year, I turned into a cat due to a mistake using the polyjuice potion, and you brewed the potions I needed to get rid of my tail and the whiskers. You labeled the potions with red ink instead of black to remind me every day what an epic mistake I'd made."
Right. He had done that. And it had served her right. Still, he eyed her for a second longer before he asked,
"What the hell are you doing here?"
It sounded nowhere near as cold as he'd envisioned it. Her figure distracted him. Granger had gotten older. She was at least in her mid-twenties. But it was unmistakably her, and this time, apparently without polyjuice potion. The longer he looked at her, the less he would have been surprised by her fetching a piece of parchment and a quill from her pocket to scribble down some notes. But she didn't take notes. Instead, her smile grew wider while she laced her fingers.
"I have to tie up a few loose ends. And you? What brings you here?"
"That's none of your business. How did you get here?"
"I assume the same way as you."
"How did you know about it?"
"That's not important, sir. I'm more interested in whether you plan to stay for longer, because then I would offer you my guest room. Well, it's more of a chamber, but you know what I mean."
She nodded at the cottage that was a little bit too perfect for a time like this, even though he still didn't know which time it was. He had no doubt that it had been built magically.
"Don't you think it risky to create a house like that in a time like this?" he therefore asked instead.
She laughed softly.
"Don't you think that I know how to use my wand?"
Severus uttered a non-committal hum, trying hard not to deduct any house points from Gryffindor. Seeing her like this, grown up, mature, confident, was as confusing as writing with his left hand. It put his brain into a similar loop as the timeline. And still, she'd neither told him how she'd found the rift, nor what she was doing here.
"So, are you planning to stay?"
she pressed him, and he hated the joy that was glistening in her brown eyes. How dare she look at him like that? At him!
"I shouldn't be here in the first place," he mumbled, and slightly turned his head, as if that would stop the unpleasant tingle itching in the back of his neck.
"And yet, here you are,"
she angled her head. He frowned.
"You know it," he realized.
She was older. She had to know.
"Know what?"
"Everything. She had to know everything."
"Whether I will stay or not,"
was the only thing he said, though. Not how the war ends, or that I'm to kill Dumbledore, or if everything works out as is planned, or if I will just not return at all. He said nothing of that out loud, not a single word. But that she was here, that she was older than... that was good, wasn't it? It had to mean that... She nodded cautiously.
"Yes, I do know."
He gulped.
"Then why do you ask?"
Granger shrugged her shoulders.
"It strikes me as the polite thing to do."
For a few seconds, she regarded him, probably waiting for an answer. But he remained silent.
Then she pointed at the house. Why don't you go ahead? I'll just finish hanging out the laundry. She turned her back to him, and while he was still taking in the sight of her time-appropriate clothing, she was already throwing a vest over one of the ropes. The interior of her abode emitted an equally magical flare as the exterior. The furniture was neat, the cabinets embellished with intricate carvings, several woven carpets were spread on the wooden floor, and colorful curtains in front of the windows. But the rooms weren't separated from each other. The kitchen to his left was blending seamlessly into a dining area that was only divided from the living room with a bookshelf. Apparently, only the bedroom was separated. There was a narrow circular stair leading up to another floor. Severus crossed the room and approached one of the windows. The glass was clear and neatly done. Even Hogwarts windows were rougher and obscured the view. Granger better know damn well how to use her wand, because if somebody not knowing about time travel was to ever see this, she would have a lot to explain. While he was waiting for her, the absurdity of this situation crept up on him once again, and the cold tingling in the back of his neck caused his pulse to speed up. What the hell was he doing here? They were in the middle of a goddamn war, and he jumped through time, probably several centuries afar, just to meet his former and suddenly very grown-up student. Hermione Granger, of all people. He couldn't have made that up. And what would he do now? Really billet on her instead of doing what he'd promised to do? This could ruin everything. How could he... Did you take a look at the guest room already? Granger's voice interrupted his frantic thoughts. He turned around to her.
No, he said. That will not be necessary.
He strode back towards her, and since she was still standing at the door, blocking his way out, he said,
I will go back.
She raised her eyebrows in surprise.
Really?
Yes. Get out of the way, Miss Granger.
But she only smiled.
Do you really want to miss the witch burning?
And that was such a strange question that Severus hesitated.
Witch burning?
But she didn't tell him anything else about this witch burning, especially not why she was so excited about it. Instead, she urged him to sit down and prepared some tea before she joined him at the table.
So, where is your husband? Severus inquired,
warily eyeing the cup in front of him. He wasn't very fond of tea. Usually, he only drank it when Pomona had prepared it, so there was no chance that Granger's variation would be to his liking. He probably should ask her for water instead. Her counter-question snapped him out of his musings.
What husband?
And when he raised his eyes, he saw that she'd knitted her brows.
The husband that had your permission to put his ring on your finger, he specified, and nodded to her left hand.
Ah, the ring. She sipped her tea. That's not a wedding ring, although it is of help that everybody assumes it is.
Severus huffed.
I bet it is.
She acknowledged that with a mysterious smile.
So, you live here?
Obviously, she replied, and left it at that.
Why?
Why what?
Why do you live here, Miss Granger, at a time like this? Has yours not been enough?
She exhaled slowly.
It has, she eventually said. But as I already told you, I have to tie up a few loose ends here.
With me,
he added, since that was what she'd said. I was waiting for you.
Yes, she admitted.
He narrowed his eyes.
And you won't tell me what exactly those loose ends are?
Granger tilted her head once again.
Do I really have to?
Severus glared at her. Then he averted his gaze. He hated that she knew everything. Yes, in a moment of weakness, he'd wished for someone he could talk to about everything Dumbledore and the Dark Lord expected from him, for someone who could tell him about the bigger picture and why he should do all of this. But when he'd wished for such a person, he had not been thinking about Hermione Granger.
How did you know that I would come here?
She arched her eyebrows, and when she didn't respond, he bristled.
Will you at least tell me what it is you spend your time with? I do hope it's more than doing the laundry.
It is, yes. I'm working as a healer, and in my spare time I'm otherwise occupied.
With?
She pursed her lips.
Experiments.
Severus frowned.
What kind of experiments?
She considered him with a closed expression, but when it didn't change his inquiring look, she jerked her head at his untouched cup.
How to make a well-brewed cup of tea, for example. You should really give it a try, sir.
Then she stood and went upstairs. He watched her leave, and only when she'd vanished from his focus did he lean over his cup and inhaled the scent of the tea. Quite pleasant. In fact, it reminded him of Pomona's infusions. As if he was examining a suspect potion, he took up the cup and brought it to his lips. He sipped at the tea and waited for the taste to blossom on his tongue. And when it did, his eyes grew big, and he looked around for Granger.
"I expect answers," he called.
Because that was Pomona's tea. But Granger refused to answer these questions as well.
"You're not ready yet,"
was the only thing she said, while she was putting clean sheets on the bed that was supposed to be his. And since his scowl had, for some mysterious reason, lost its effect on her, he returned downstairs and looked around. There, he noticed a door that led off from the living room. It was right next to the fireplace, hidden in the shadows. That was why he hadn't noticed it earlier. Severus pursed his lips when he sensed the magical wards it was protected with. He glanced around, and since Granger frustrated him, and was still upstairs, he slid his wand in his hand and began lifting the wards. She knew how to use her wand, indeed. He needed more time than he'd anticipated to break through her wards. But finally, the lock clicked, and the door swung open. Severus poked his head through it, and when lights along the walls came to life, he snorted. It was a laboratory. So, she'd really been serious about the experiments. He curiously approached one of the cauldrons hanging over a fire on a table in the middle of the room. Peering into it, frowning, he smelled the fumes.
"Polyjuice potion," he mumbled. What the hell was she playing at?
"What are you doing here?"
Granger's sharp voice caused him to look up.
"Investigating," he replied, and arched his brows, eyeing her skeptically.
Maybe she did try to deceive him. Maybe he was about to walk right into a trap. He swiftly pointed his wand at her, casting a silent stupefy. But she was faster. It was repelled by her protego, and Severus had to duck his head.
"Stop it!" she yelled. "The potion's not for me!"
Severus glared at her.
"Then what are you brewing it for?"
She raised her chin a fraction.
"Stay and find out for yourself,"
she said in a clipped voice, and actually turned around without protecting herself against another attack from him. In leaving, she added,
"And restore the wards before you leave the lab. I don't want to find any animals in there."
He knitted his brows.
"What animals, pray tell, could get into a room bare of windows?"
he called after her, circled the table and approached the door. She was standing in the kitchen corner, taking a chopping board and a definitely modern knife from a drawer. Upon his question, she stilled and peered at him past the bookshelf.
"I don't know," she nagged. "Maybe a doe?"
Severus froze. He stared at her for several seconds, trying to ascertain whether it had been a coincidence or whether she knew that as well. And if so, how? How could she...
"I'm sorry," she mumbled. "I shouldn't have said that."
She turned back to the work table and tied her hair into a knot.
"How do you know about it?"
Severus asked, and strode to her.
"Forget it. I really shouldn't have said that."
"But you did."
He grasped her arm and turned her around. She took a sharp breath.
"How do you know that, Miss Granger?"
She gulped, her eyes jumping back and forth between his.
"I can't tell you."
He growled softly and let her go, quickly taking a step back because he'd suddenly become aware of how close he'd got to her. Indecently close.
"I've had enough of your games," he then decided.
"What do you mean?"
"I mean that I will leave. I shouldn't be here to begin with. As you are well aware, I do have a job to do."
He turned away before she could react. He didn't want to know it if he wouldn't succeed. He didn't want to know it because that was out of the question. He had to succeed, and the door of this too-perfect house banged against the wall when he tore it open and stormed outside.
"Professor Snape!"
Granger called after him, but he didn't listen to her. He didn't stop, didn't look back. All of this was insane, and he had to go back to his own time as soon as possible. And yet, he didn't apparate, but strode along the only path that led from Granger's house back to the rift in time. Because, needless to say, she'd had to make sure that he would meet her as soon as he arrived here. Severus scoffed. She was just like Dumbledore. She, too, could tell him a lot, and chose not to. Why the hell was everybody thinking they could treat him like a puppet on a string? Why was everybody thinking that he would just accept, knowing only what was necessary? And why was everybody thinking that they had to decide what was necessary and what wasn't? Merlin, he wanted to scream. Not even a time travel like this was enough to find one human being who didn't boss him around. He might as well go back and dance to Dumbledore's pipe. And yet, when he'd arrived at the rift, he stopped, sweating and panting, instead of walking straight through it. He put his hands on his hips and glared at the shimmering surface. His head was empty, not a single thought crossed his mind, as though they'd become tired after all these years of brooding and finally come to rest. Severus barked a mirthless laugh, closed his eyes and tilted his head back. A warm gust of wind blew his hair from his face and drove the scent of flowers and a nearing rain shower into his nose. The leaves were rustling like waves on the coast of northern England. But when a branch cracked next to him, he tore his eyes open and whirled around. The stupefy was virtually in his wand when he recognized Granger, and he was barely able to stop the curse. Not that it would have been necessary.
"What do you want?"
he snapped, and lowered his wand.
"I want to stop you."
"Why? I cannot stay."
"Not forever, no. But you can, for a while."
Severus rubbed his eyes.
"What for?" he breathed. "What am I supposed to stay for, if I have to go back anyway?"
Only when he looked back at her did he remember who exactly he was talking to, and that he should be ashamed of getting carried away in front of a student. He straightened his back.
"Trust me, sir," Granger replied in a warm voice. "Give me a chance."
He regarded her for quite a while, and to his own surprise he nodded before he imposed a condition.
"Only if you will answer my questions."
"I will, when the time has come."
"And when will that be?"
She smiled fleetingly.
"You'll see."
But that wasn't enough.
"How do you know when the time has come?"
Granger took a deep breath and exhaled slowly, as if she was contemplating whether or not she could answer this question. And apparently, she once again chose the latter, since she repeated,
"Trust me. Please."
Severus scrunched up his nose.
"Trust,"
he muttered. How he hated that word. She lowered her eyes.
"I know. I'm asking a lot of you."
"But,"
he prompted, when she lapsed into silence.
"No but," she said, and shook her head. "I'm asking a lot of you, and I hope that you can grant it."
Severus looked away, and his eyes once again found the rift. Thinking about going back now made his hair stand on end. Did he really have anything to lose if he stayed a little longer? Granger, and by now he was positive that it was really her, obviously knew a lot that he didn't, and she wouldn't risk letting the Dark Lord win. If she said that he could stay, then he could probably trust her.
"Very well," he mumbled.
"Good," she sighed. "Do you want to walk or apparate back?"
"Walk,"
he said, and when she nodded and turned to the path, he added,
"Alone."
She froze and regarded him for a second, but then she seemed to realize that she couldn't demand trust from him if she wasn't ready to return the favor, and nodded.
"All right. See you later."
The next moment, she disappeared. Severus sighed gravely and ran his hands down his damp face before he slowly set off. The next morning, there was a loud knocking at the door downstairs, and Severus woke with a start, only to knock his head on a truss. Hard. Swearing vilely, he rubbed his forehead, ducked deeper than necessary underneath the truss, and put his feet on the ground.
Who the hell was visiting Granger so early that not even he was awake? But when he went downstairs about 10 minutes later, with a very saturnine look, he realized that his inner clock probably wasn't quite adjusted to this time. Granger was up and about as well, and she didn't seem as if she'd been startled awake, not in the slightest.
"Good morning, sir,"
she greeted him and smiled. He growled.
"Oh, so this is him?"
That nosy question caused him to look for the guest. He spotted a young woman with red hair, tied into pigtails and curled up her head.
"This is who?" he asked.
"Yes, that's him,"
Granger replied, ignoring his objection. The brown eyes of the stranger grew wider, her lips forming an O. Then she put a tortoise down on the kitchen table and came closer. She openly looked him up and down, circled him, and eventually clicked her tongue.
"Now I understand why you waited for so long, Miney."
"I beg your pardon?" Severus asked indignantly.
Granger rolled her eyes and blushed faintly.
"Stop it!"
"Stop what?" the stranger asked innocently and grinned.
"First of all, stop looking at me like that," Severus snarled, "lest you regret it."
She incredulously turned to Granger.
"He's serious,"
she informed the redhead. Her gaze turned to Severus.
"Handsome and dangerous," she mumbled, prompting a bewildered look from both himself and Granger.
But she didn't even seem to notice, since she only smiled to herself, pivoted on the spot, and took the tortoise back up. She gently stroked its shell.
I think you better go, Wendelin. We'll meet tonight in the village, okay?"
"All right."
The stranger, who was apparently punished with the name Wendelin, snatched an apple from the table and headed to the door.
"And be on time," Granger admonished her.
"I always am."
"No, you're not."
"It was just that one time," she sighed.
"That one time almost blew our cover. Isabel could have died."
"Ugh, I know. I'll be on time, I promise."
"Great."
While the women were talking, Severus narrowed his eyes and mused. Wendelin? Witch burnings. That rang a bell. But only when the door closed behind her with a click did something in his mind click as well.
"That is Wendelin the Weird," he blurted.
"Indeed,"
Granger confirmed, openly amused, and sat down at the table.
"I never really believed she was real either, until I met her."
Severus blinked several times before he went to the table as well, taking a seat.
"Where did she get the tortoise?"
20th century Dublin."
Granger sounded as casual as if she were talking about the weather. Only when she noticed his cocked eyebrow did she add,
"As it turns out, Wendelin is not at all a witch of this century, but has found the same rift that we found, albeit shortly after it opened. And because she's more curious and impulsive than is good for her, she's gone through it. More than once."
"I did not expect that," he admitted.
"Neither did I,"
she smiled lopsidedly.
"But I'm very glad about it. Without her help, I would have been left stranded, historical education or not. Do you want some coffee?"
"I'd rather like to know what you want me to meet Wendelin the Weird for. Or hasn't the time come yet?"
Granger answered his question with a little laugh. It sounded so much like the laugh that he'd overheard at Hogwarts every now and then, that he shied back on his chair by instinct, just as if he'd got too close to her again. But she didn't seem to notice, probably because she was just getting up to fetch the coffee.
"There's no right time for that, but it would be more fun if you would let yourself be surprised."
"Of course it would," he growled.
She grinned at him mischievously.
"Oh, don't be so grumpy, sir. And besides, you do know the lore of Wendelin the Weird, and I promised you a witch burning yesterday, so you're only missing the finer details. And the polyjuice potion you found in my lab yesterday is one of them."
She sat down again, and her joy gave way to genuine kindness.
"Try thinking about that for a while, instead of everything you left behind on the other side of the rift."
He pursed his lips.
"And go outside. The sun is shining, and there is a bench on the eastern side of the house. When did you last sit down in the sun?"
Severus lowered his eyes, for the truth was, he couldn't remember.
He'd always been busy in the last years, even in summer. And Spinner's End wasn't the right place for something like sitting down in the sun, anyway. So he heeded Granger's advice, even though he did it with a scoff, as a matter of principle. Took his mug, and went outside to sit down on a bench in the sun. That evening finally gave him some of the answers to the questions that he lately had indeed thought more about than about Dumbledore and the Dark Lord, even though that might only have been due to the fact that the both of them were about 500 years away. He could tell, because when he asked for the date, Granger had indeed graced him with an answer.
"It's the 25th of May, 1488, sir."
She'd said it with a grin, probably because she knew from experience how such a date felt if you normally characterized yourself as a child of the 20th century.
"You do get used to it eventually."
"I'm sure," he grunted, and already wanted to leave, when he faltered. "Do you think the witch hunts are the second powerful event that created the rift in time?" She hunched her shoulders.
"I assume as much. At least, I haven't found anything hinting at any other event during this time."
She sighed softly.
"I thought it amusing, when we talked about Wendelin in class, that she liked being burned because the flames couldn't harm her. But that only applies to very few witches. There are hardly any wands available here. Wand-making is still in the early stages of development, at least as we know it. And the wands that are available are extremely expensive. I brought some from our time, but communication between witches and wizards is lousy. Most of them take care not to be recognized as magical, and understandably so. But that makes things difficult. Most of the witches and wizards, however, are only marginally able to use wandless magic, and they're better at igniting a fire than extinguishing it, not to mention casting a flame-freezing charm. I think more real witches have been burned than the history books tell us."
"Probably," he said softly. And if he remembered correctly, then the era of the witch hunts just began in the 15th century. On this side, the rift had to stretch across centuries if the witch hunts really were the other pole of the loop. And yet, in the evening, Granger was vibrating with joyous anticipation, and equipped Severus with more suitable attire and a translation charm.
"Just in case someone wants to talk to you," she said as she did so, and he was glad about it, even though he would never tell her. The English of this time was completely different than the English he spoke, and in this small part of the world it was probably mixed with ancient Gaelic.
But Granger didn't cast the charm on herself, and he couldn't stop himself from wondering how long she'd already have to have been here for her to learn this language sufficiently to get along without magical help. But she most likely wouldn't answer that question anyway.
"Take care that nobody sees your wand," was the only thing she said before their departure.
"Naturally." And so, he was now standing in the middle of the neighboring village's marketplace. The mild summer wind toyed with his loose attire, while he watched the crowd of people who roared and howled while the last arrangements at the stake were being made. Granger was standing next to him, her eyes roving over the crowd, without a doubt looking for Wendelin. A blend of many scents hovered in the air, carried by the wind. Most prominent, of course, the smell of fire. Even though the stake hadn't been ignited yet, smaller and larger fires were burning everywhere to provide light and prepare some food. That he could smell as well, more intensely than he would have preferred. But what appalled him the most was the multitude of body scents, sewage, and dirt. It wasn't a particularly clean century that he'd ended up in. Granger chuckled when she saw him scrunch his nose. "I know," he cut in. "You do get used to it." Eventually, Wendelin emerged from the crowd.
"There you are," Hermione said. "Ready, then?"
"Totally ready."
"Ready for what?" Severus asked.
"You'll see."
Granger grabbed his arm and dragged him along into a dirty but deserted alley. Wendelin followed behind.
"We'll apparate," Granger briefed him,
about 2 seconds before he was squeezed through a keyhole. Severus gasped and stumbled when they arrived at their destination, while Granger muttered an imperturbatio. Merlin, he hated sidelong apparitions. When he'd regained his balance, he looked around and found that they were in a prison cell.
"What the hell?" he muttered.
"Christiana!"
Wendelin cried, and turned around to her.
A woman in a filthy camisole was crouched against the wall in the rear part of the cell.
"Wendy!"
she called, staggered to her feet, and threw herself into Wendolyn's arms. "We don't have time for that," Granger intervened, and fetched a vial from her pocket. And even though he was able to understand her, Severus noticed that she was speaking another language now. Another English, Gaelic, something in between. He watched her mouth in fascination.
"I need a hair from you," she was just saying, and Severus blinked. "Yes, of course,"
the woman named Christiana mumbled, and drew her fingers through her hair until one of them stuck.
"There you go."
Since she seemed surprised neither by them appearing out of thin air, nor by Granger putting her hair into a vial, Severus assumed that she was one of the real witches. And slowly, he began to understand what was happening.
"That's what you need Polyjuice Potion for," he said,
now in a different language himself, although he wasn't able to control it, and watched Granger passing the vial along to Wendolyn. The redhead had undressed to her undergarment in the meantime, and now gestured him to turn around, probably so the women could completely exchange their clothes.
"Theoretically, I wouldn't need it,"
Granger explained, and sounded a bit reproachful.
"But at least this part of the history books is accurate. Wendolyn likes getting burned at the stake, so she takes over for every woman we can get out of here."
"It tickles so pleasantly," Wendolyn remarked.
"Yeah, sure," Granger groaned. "Are you ready?"
"Yes, you can turn around again." When Severus did, he was face to face with two Christianas, one of them in a filthy camisole, the other one in the dress that Wendolyn had worn before.
"Great. Then hand me your wand, and we'll take Christiana away so we're back in time."
"That would be nice,"
the Christiana, who in reality was Wendolyn, replied, and passed Granger her wand.
"I will not let you burn,"
she promised, and reached out one arm for Christiana, the other one for him. Severus twisted his face. He would rather have apparated by himself, but since he didn't know where they were heading, he had no choice but to endure another sidelong apparition. It carried them to the edge of a wood, and Christiana gasped, just like him.
"Are both of you unharmed?" Granger asked.
"Yes," Severus growled, and Christiana nodded.
"Just a little nauseous," she mumbled. "That will pass."
"Haley?"
She called the last word out loud, and Severus looked around warily. Soon he heard someone getting closer.
"I'm here."
"Brilliant. I need to go back. Wendolyn was late again."
"All right," the woman named Haley panted. "I'm here. I'll look after Christiana."
"Good luck,"
the newly freed woman said while she took a cloak Haley had brought.
"Same to you,"
Granger replied.
"Take care."
The two women disapparated, and Granger turned to face him.
"Do you want to return on your own?"
"Absolutely," he snarled,
and she nodded at him curtly before she disappeared herself. Severus huffed, then he focused and followed her. Granger was nowhere to be seen when he emerged from the dirty alley and returned to the marketplace, and so he positioned himself at the side and watched the happenings for about 15 minutes. Wendolyn was led to the stake, her hands tied, and the crowd started jeering and roaring again. The witch was pelted with something that Severus assumed was old vegetables, but he couldn't see it clearly. When the flames were greedily licking at the piled-up logs, working their way up to the woman sitting at the top of it, he shook his head and leaned against one of the houses, his arms crossed. Wendolyn was screaming like a banshee, begging for mercy, fighting against the cords. If he hadn't known that Granger had had enough time to cast the necessary spells, he would have been absolutely positive that she really was being burned. But when Granger found him eventually, she was grinning.
"Well, are you enjoying the spectacle?"
she asked, and he had to lean down a bit to be able to understand her. Her warm breath tickled his ear.
"How often have you performed this show before?"
he asked back, but he tried not to get closer to her than strictly necessary, even though she was smelling quite pleasant, contrary to most of the other people surrounding them. He was tempted to cast Muffliato over them, but he didn't dare draw his wand.
"This is the 8th time."
"You seem to enjoy it quite a lot."
"Why shouldn't I?"
She looked around and whispered straight into his ear.
"It is quite satisfying to save at least a few lives."
Goosebumps crawled down Severus's spine, and he moved back. He scrutinized her face with narrowed eyes, her blushed cheeks, her tongue that darted out, wetting her lips.
Really?
Don't you feel the same? He turned away and shifted his weight to his other foot.
I don't remember,
he said softly, and hoped that she hadn't heard him. There hadn't been that many lives to save for him lately. More often than not, he'd had to stand by and watch people die. Eventually, he nodded at the stake.
What is your plan for the escape? They will notice that she's not burning.
I've transfigured some of the logs into deceptively real-looking bodily remains when the flames are high enough. And Wendelin wears a ring, hidden by a delusion charm. It's a portkey, and as soon as the flames hide her, she'll activate it with a password, and it takes her home. There she'll have a wash, and wait until the polyjuice potion wears off, and then she'll come back here and mingle with the crowd. Once again, the tip of her tongue traced her lips. After the burning, there'll be a feast, sir. Severus would have liked nothing better than to return to Granger's house when said feast began. He hated parties, he hated dancing, and he hated loud people, especially if they happened to be muggles. Here he found all in abundance. But Granger seemed to like it, at least enough to have her fun. And Severus had surprisingly a lot of fun watching her. Hogwarts hosted too few balls and feasts for him to have ever seen her so radiant before. And even if he had, he probably wouldn't have taken such a close look. She was his student, after all, and 20 years his junior. It would have never entered his head to watch her there, as he was watching her here. Because everything was different here. She was no student. He was no teacher, not at the moment. And she was no longer 20 years his junior, but only 10 or 11. It didn't feel as indecent anymore to watch her dance. It probably should, but no. The more time Severus spent here, the less important all of the rules of his time became. And Granger seemed to sense that as well, because at one point in the night, she grabbed his arm and dragged him out to the marketplace, where a lot of people were dancing to the music of a group of farmers who had brought their instruments.
"Absolutely not," he objected, and dug his heels into the ground.
"Oh, come on! You can't just be standing over there scowling the whole time. That's not what you're here for."
"What am I here for?"
he countered, but he sensed his resistance fading. She looked up at him, panting. Some hairs were sticking to her sweaty face, and her cheeks were blushed. "To be able to do what needs to be done," she said, and her brown eyes twinkled. "Come on." So he complied. And because he'd never danced like this, Lucius had only taught him some standard dances for the balls he'd visited at Malfoy Manor in his youth, but nothing that equaled this. He had to let Granger lead. Her hand was warm in his, and there was no doubt that they were now decidedly closer to each other than had ever been imaginable in their time. Her scent tickled his nostrils, her eyes held on to his, so intensely as though she were attempting to use legitimacy on him. But she didn't, and he didn't either. He wanted the answers she'd promised him, but he didn't want them that way.
"Why did you stay here, Miss Granger?"
he asked, when he couldn't stand the eye contact a second longer.
"Why not?" she inquired, in a loud voice, while her hair momentarily blocked his view of her cherry cheeks.
He leaned closer.
"Because you could have done more good in our time than saving some unlucky witches' lives. Do you even realize how much you've sacrificed?"
"Who says I've sacrificed anything?" she laughed. "Granted, my career was a sacrifice, but this makes me happy as well. And I'm over there regularly. Or did you think my friends would have just let me leave, let alone my parents?"
She bit her lower lip.
"There's nothing I'm missing out on, sir."
Severus stared at her. Well, she had hinted that she'd crossed the rift multiple times already. After all, she'd gotten some wands. But that she was commuting between the times, like other people between home and work, that he hadn't anticipated.
"You never get enough, do you? It's not enough to get the best out of one time, it has to be the best of 2 times, he hissed.
And when he whirled her around the next time, it was a bit harder than he'd planned. Granger flashed her eyes at him when she stumbled back and hesitated for a second before she said,
"Jealous, sir?"
And again,
the tip of her tongue slid out between her lips. His eyes darted to her mouth. He couldn't stop himself. Growling softly, he grabbed her harder, pulled her close, and muttered, "My jealousy has to be earned, Granger."
Then he let her go and forced his way through the crowd.
"How does one earn your jealousy?"
her voice called after him while he neared the edge of the woods. He'd had enough of the feast. He wanted to leave, although he wasn't quite sure where he wanted to go yet, to Granger's house or back to his own time.
"Certainly not like this," he replied briskly, but didn't slow down.
Much to his regret, she caught up to him, though, grabbed his arm and turned him around to face her.
"Really?" she asked, panting heavily. "Because as furious as it makes you, I've got an entirely different impression."
"You haven't seen me when I'm furious," Severus snarled.
He struggled out of her grip, but he stayed where he was.
"Yes, I've seen you when you're furious," Granger countered with a mirthless smile. "I've been there, with Harry in the infirmary after Sirius had escaped at the end of our third year. I heard you roar, long before you even entered the infirmary. I've known you when you're furious, sir. And that I jump between times, from one peaceful period to another, taking what I want, doing what I want, and especially not doing what I don't want, that is making you furious."
He took a deep breath and held it, his heart thumping in step with the rhythm of the music in the marketplace, against his ribs and up into his throat.
"How couldn't it?" he hissed eventually. "How could I see you like this and not be furious?"
Granger nodded.
"Yes, how could you?"
She lowered her eyes to where his hand was a clenched fist, and he hadn't even noticed it. She touched it, and Severus flinched back.
"What are you doing, Miss Granger?"
He emphasized her name, reminding her of who she was and who he was. She gulped.
I can't give you what you want right now. I can't change that you have to do something that you don't want to do."
She raised her eyes.
"I would love to. I would love to spare you all of it."
She pinned her lips closed, and tears were glistening in her eyes.
"But what I can give you is a few days of doing what you want. And I hope—"
She swallowed, and her gaze darted to his lips. Then she raised herself on tiptoes and kissed him. Severus inhaled sharply and stepped back, grabbing her shoulders.
"Miss Granger, you forget yourself."
She laughed briefly and nodded.
"Yes, absolutely. And I want you to do the same."
She raised her hands and took his from her shoulders, holding on to them. Her fingers were a little cold.
"I no longer am who you think I am. And I know who you are. I've seen it. Everything. And I stayed here. For you."
"Only so I can do what is necessary," he snarled. "And this is absolutely not necessary for me to do what needs to be done."
"No," she admitted quietly. "But maybe for you to be able to survive."
She was quiet for some rapid breaths, held his hands, stroked them with her thumbs.
"And for me to do what needs to be done," she then added softly.
Severus frowned.
"What are you talking about, girl?"
Another brief laugh, and a tear dropped under her cheek.
"I'm talking about more than 2 years of arithmetic calculations and analyses of the time rift, and women that were to be executed for something that I fought for during my whole childhood, that I sacrificed so much for. I'm tired of sacrificing."
She brushed her cheek.
"Aren't you, Severus?"
He wanted to look away, had been so sure that his name out of her mouth would give him the impulse he needed, that it would remind him, like the snap of a whip, who he was and who she was, and that there still were rules that not even 500 years could overcome. But he didn't look away. Didn't look away for long seconds, only stared into her brown eyes that seemed black in the dim light of the late evening. Or maybe it was that her pupils were dilated, swallowing the brown iris. Whatever it was, he didn't look away, and her words seeped into him like a warm shiver down his spine, and the deeper they seeped,
the more he forgot who he was.
Yes,
he mumbled eventually, and her little hitched breath finally was an impulse, albeit not one that let him look away. Before Severus could think about all this too deeply, he forgot himself and kissed her. And he hadn't even realized what he was doing when Granger apparated.
ETL Echo, echoing tales for everyone to love. ETL Echo presents Tempus Gratiae by Charlotte Rea.
Chapter 4. Severus. There was one thing that set this time, this house, this upstairs bedroom, fundamentally apart from his rooms in Hogwarts dungeons. He woke up to the chirping of birds and not to his alarm spell. But he was indecisive about what he liked better. Severus groaned and rolled on his back. Blinking, he looked around and realized that he wasn't in the little chamber Granger had provided him. From there, he needed about 3 seconds until he remembered last evening and the night that had followed. Merlin. He arched his eyebrows and peered at the other side of the bed, but it was deserted. Severus snorted. What else had he expected? She'd spent the night with him. He could hardly expect more from her than that. He threw the blanket aside and stood up. The fresh air of the early morning made him shiver, and he dressed quickly. There was a chest of drawers near the door, and on it a basin with fresh water that he used to wash his face. The rest of his body hygiene he finished, just like yesterday, with a spell. When he went downstairs, he found the house equally as deserted as the bed. But there was a mug of coffee on the table, apparently preserved by a stasis charm, since it was still warm when Severus sipped at it. He took the mug and went outside, looking around. Granger? Well, given the circumstances, it was probably more appropriate to call her by her first name now. Anyway, she was sitting on the same bench she'd advised him to relax on yesterday morning, her face turned towards the sun, her eyes closed. As if it had a life of its own, his gaze found her lips, and he remembered how they'd felt under his own. How her hair had smelled when he'd kissed her neck, and how strong her legs had been when— Good morning! She snapped him out of his memories and smiled. Did you sleep well? He nodded curtly.
You?
She swayed her head.
Until Haley called me, I slept well, yes.
She called you?
He repeated, since he hadn't noticed anything. Hermione raised her hand until the silver ring sparkled in the sunlight.
We've got our ways.
I see,
he mumbled. Then he pulled himself together and sat down beside her.
What happened? Is the next witch burning already scheduled?
She smiled fleetingly.
No. One of the women in the village went into labor.
Severus looked at her, his eyebrows raised.
You've already delivered a baby today.
She laughed softly.
Not me, no. But I helped.
He huffed and took another sip of his coffee. Frowning, he looked into the woods, watched a squirrel scurrying up a tree in spirals, and felt tranquility seep into his mind as he hadn't known for years. He ended that moment by asking,
"Last night, what was that? Was that your plan to encourage me so I'm able to do what needs to be done in our time?"
"My plan?"
She laughed, but it sounded different than earlier.
"You were the one going for it yesterday."
"After you offered it to me?"
"Yes, offered. I didn't force you, and I would kindly ask you to refrain from painting it as if I've prostituted myself for the war effort."
He twisted his face. Hearing it phrased like this felt like a verbal slap in the face.
"I'm sorry," he mumbled.
Hermione nodded, but she folded her arms over her chest.
"What happened last night wasn't part of any plan. On the contrary, I'm not even sure if it was the right decision."
"I thought so,"
he replied in a dark voice, and traced his thumb along the rim of his mug. The coffee suddenly tasted bitter on his tongue.
"Yes, that I can imagine. But my reasons for questioning last night are different than what you have in mind."
He looked at her.
"Are they?"
She gulped and nodded faintly, her gaze jumping back and forth between his eyes and his lips,
as if she were contemplating kissing him again instead of answering his question.
"I have to let you return, and last night didn't make things easier."
Severus frowned and eyed her critically. "It cannot be difficult for you to send me back. Last night was hardly more than some passing emotions." She pinned her lips together and averted her gaze.
"Maybe for you," she muttered.
"Hermione, we..."
"Save your breath," she interrupted. "I owe you some answers, and I think the right time has come."
Without waiting for his reply, she stood and went inside. Severus took a deep breath and exhaled slowly. He should never have let last night happen. When he followed her inside, he found her sitting at the kitchen table, and in front of her were lying three items: a vial with a grass-green potion, a roll of parchment, and a piece of wood with two rings on it. Severus eyed the items in bewilderment. "If that is a love potion, a marriage vow, and the matching rings, I can promise you that is nothing I would choose." She looked up at him blankly.
"Don't be ridiculous."
Severus pursed his lips, but he sat down opposite her.
"So, will you tell me on your own what all of this means, or do I have to ask?"
"The former," she said. "During my sixth year at Hogwarts, you disappeared for 1 week. Nobody knew where you'd been, even though nobody wanted to admit it. You acted as if nothing had happened when you returned. Well, most of the time."
He cocked an eyebrow.
"Your mask slipped."
"My mask never slips," he said.
"And yet it did. With me. Twice."
He felt his eyes grow wider, but he remained silent.
"For a while, I thought I'd just imagined it, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. As you just said, your mask never slips. And if it does, it means something. But I couldn't understand why it slipped with me, of all people. Why you lured me here."
"Lured you here?" he repeated incredulously.
She exhaled sharply, leaned back on her chair, and crossed her arms.
"During my last school year, I tried to find out what had happened. As I said, I couldn't stop thinking about it, not even after—"
She stopped herself, and yet Severus knew what she wanted to say. "Not even after you died." He was under no illusion of how the war would end for him. Hermione continued,
"But nobody could help me with that mystery, and so I gave up. For several years, I stopped thinking about it, until I received an owl that brought me your notebook. You must have sent it to be delivered delayed. To my flat in London."
Severus blinked and barely noticeably shook his head. Why would he have done such a thing? Why his notebook? Why delayed? Yet he gestured her to go on.
"At the date of your disappearance, it only read Dol Brora, and I researched it. In Dol, I found the time rift. There's only one bed and breakfast, and the woman that manages it gave me a stack of books that you'd deposited for me years ago. In them, I found everything I needed to know about time rifts. What they are, how they develop, how I could analyze them. And what I didn't find in the books, I researched for myself."
She brushed her hair behind her ear.
"Be that as it may, you wanted me to come here, so that I'm here when you arrive."
When she lapsed into silence, Severus took a deep breath and ran his hand across his mouth. Was it really possible that he would do these things? Or had done? Merlin, he hated time magic. What she was telling him was in her past and his future. And yet, it was beyond his power to stop things from playing out like this again. There was only one timeline. That they were now sitting here was proof that he would do exactly what Hermione was telling him, because if he didn't, she wouldn't have been here. A headache was building between his temples.
"That's ridiculous," he mumbled and rubbed his forehead.
"It's the only sensible explanation."
"Is it?" he snarled. "Anyone could have taken Polyjuice Potion to do these things in my guise."
"And yet it's you who's here, and nobody else."
He could hardly say anything against that.
"So you've been here all this time because you've been waiting for me?"
She looked him in the eyes and nodded.
"It's been more than 2 years since the owl with your notebook reached me. I've been here most of the time ever since."
He stared at her, stunned. Then he rose and went to the window,
because he could no longer stand looking at her.
"I was serious about what I said yesterday, Severus. I'm missing out on nothing. I regularly go through the rift to visit my friends and my family, but..."
"How?" he cut in, and turned around to her. "How are you able to live in both times simultaneously without causing chaos?"
As far as he knew, it was impossible to control at what time one would step out of the rift. It threw you out somewhere during the time it existed. That was how Hermione could have gone through it after him in their time, and arrived before him here in the past. And that was why the cold tingling sensation was edging itself deeper into the back of his neck the longer he stayed. The fear that he would return a few years too late, that he would not be there when he had to be.
"I found a way to calculate when you have to go through the rift to return to the right time, at least to some extent. The rift isn't chaos. It has a system."
Severus shrugged with his eyebrows. "Does it?"
It only sounded half as snide as he'd planned, because he was fascinated, and a part of him wanted to know more about it. But Hermione didn't give that part of him what it wanted.
"It does. Well, as I said, I'm regularly on the other side, but my life happens here. And I have a good life. I'm accomplishing something. You can't imagine how many lives my knowledge about magical medicine has already saved here. I don't regret staying here."
"Really?" he snapped, "because right now you're very much sugarcoating your decision."
She looked at him.
"I'm sugarcoating it for you, because that, as well, is something that I'm serious about. I know you. I talked with everyone who could tell me something about you. I studied your notebook and your way of thinking. I..."
But once again she broke off, and this time he didn't know how she had planned to continue her sentence.
"I know you, as well as anyone except for yourself is able to know you. And what I did yesterday evening had nothing to do with a temporary wave of emotions."
She looked quickly away, and shut her mouth abruptly, as though she'd instantly regretted saying the last sentence out loud. Severus closed his eyes and pinched the bridge of his nose. Merlin, there she was, Hermione Granger, brightest witch of her age, sacrificing her life. For him. So she could be here when he was quarreling with his task, 500 years in the past.
"You shouldn't have done that," he mumbled.
"How could I not? You asked me to."
He gulped, and was glad that he hadn't had any breakfast yet.
"And, apart from that, you were quite right."
He arched his eyebrows.
"About what?"
"I do enjoy getting the best out of two times."
She smiled lopsidedly.
"Who can claim to be friends with someone that went down in history?"
"You are friends with Harry Potter, isn't that enough?" he asked silkily.
"That applies to a lot of people in my time. It isn't that exceptional. But Wendelin the Weird?"
He rubbed his eyes, shaking his head. Eventually, he nodded at the items lying on the table again.
"So, what is all this for?"
She pursed her lips.
"This is for the only thing coming that I can tell you about."
He frowned and went back to the table, sitting down.
"Why can't you tell me more?"
"Because it would mess everything up. I've calculated it, all of the variables. When I got here and realized how everything fit together, and which part I had to play, I wondered how much I was supposed to tell you about the war. If everything happened as it happened because I told you what would happen, or if I had to be careful. So I calculated everything, tested every variable. Even Professor Vector would have been amazed. But apparently, I can only tell you this one bit without everything going awry."
"Which part?"
She raised her eyes.
"The end."
Severus nodded slowly. "So, the end."
"I'm listening."
She took a deep breath.
"The potion is a modified antidote, and the parchment holds a charm that will slow down the metabolism of your body enough to have a chance."
"A chance of what?"
"A chance to survive Nagini's bite."
She didn't look him in the eyes when she said it. Severus closed them briefly.
"That damn snake."
"She will kill me," he mumbled.
"No, she won't. We thought she did, but..."
"But?"
She gulped.
"I was there when you were attacked. I saw you die after..."
And again she silenced herself
and this time she huffed in annoyance.
"Merlin, this is more difficult than I thought."
"You don't say," he deadpanned. She drew her fingers through her hair.
"Anyway, you weren't there when we went to collect your body."
"Where?"
"The Shrieking Shack."
Severus groaned. "Really? The damned shack? After all these years, he would still die there, attacked by a murderous monster?" Hermione ignored him.
"Professor McGonagall told me the next day that you hadn't been there when they went to get you. She assumed that you'd fallen victim to the remaining Death Eaters, but now I know better. You weren't there because you survived, because I succeeded in brewing this antidote during the years I've been here."
"You said it was modified."
"There was already an antidote for Nagini's venom. After Arthur had been bitten, St. Mungo's had produced one."
"Yes. It's a combination of the antidote and a strong blood-replenishing potion. If you cast the charm before you go to the Shrieking Shack, your body will absorb the venom slowly enough for you to take it as soon as you're alone again. If you want to."
She added the last words very softly, and when he raised his eyes, he saw her swallow.
"Do I even have a choice?"
he breathed. After all, his body had been gone, and contrary to Minerva, he didn't believe that any Death Eater on the run would risk his freedom to take revenge on his body. So he had, would, apparently choose to survive. She shrugged her shoulders.
"I don't know. I haven't seen you since we left you in the Shrieking Shack. Maybe you survived. Maybe something else happened to you. Some hours did pass before anyone had time to look for you. I know a lot, but that..."
She shook her head, and there was something in her eyes Severus couldn't describe. Eventually, she pushed the rings across the table.
"When you survive, if you want to survive, if you want to return, then you'll need one of these. They're anchors. If you wear one of them and I wear the other one, you'll get out of the rift at the right moment. I doubt that you'll be able to calculate the right moment to go through that night, so I created these."
Severus looked at her flabbergasted, and for some seconds silence rested between them.
"You want me to return here?" he then asked.
"Yes," she nodded. "If you want to."
She smiled fleetingly.
"I assume our time won't be very favorable towards you if they learn you survived. Of course, you can go anywhere else. It's your decision. After all these years, it finally is."
She gulped.
"But you can also come back here. This time isn't exactly heaven on earth, but..."
She shrugged again.
"It grows on you. And our century is only one time rift away. I've come to understand that thing really well, so you could go back and forth like Gwendolyn and me if you want to. And if you don't want to share this time with me, then I would leave this house to you and go back for good."
She dropped her gaze.
"For goodness sake, Hermione," he mumbled and rubbed his face. "Don't you think you plan a little far ahead?"
"Yes, maybe," she admitted. "I've had a lot of time to plan and think, and I can imagine how crazy all of this sounds to you. But I want you to know that you can have a destination, that there can be something for you after the war, if you want to have it."
"And what if I don't?"
"Then I'll know," she said, and raised her chin a fraction.
Severus huffed.
"I can't think about that now."
"You don't have to. There's still a lot ahead of you. I reckon you'll find enough time to think about what happened here after you go back."
The way she said it made him shiver. The next morning, Severus returned to his time after he'd used the previous day to sit on the bench, roam through the woods, and remember what it meant to be alive, even though he couldn't have that yet. In the evening, Hermione had come to him and told him that he had to return this morning.
"It's the right moment. I've..."
"Calculated it, I know,"
he'd interrupted her. And yet, he wondered how much arithmancy she'd done since he'd apparently lured her here. That was a point he still struggled with, the notion that he would ask her to be here for him, that her waiting for him here would be important enough to him that he would virtually sacrifice her life for it.
"I didn't have to do it," she'd said, after she'd wormed that thought out of him. "I could have just gone back and forgotten about everything."
"Why didn't you?"
Because it's not only about you, Severus. The outcome of the war was depending on you to be able to do what Professor Dumbledore demanded of you. If you're sure that you could have also made it without our encounter here, then try and change the course of time. Don't lure me here again. But if you have only the slightest doubt, then I beg you, do it. Because it's worth it.
He still hadn't come to a conclusion when it was finally time to go. But he took the potion with him, and the charm she'd created for him, and a piece of parchment with her address in London, and the list of books he'd left for her in Dole. Would leave, whatever. And finally, the larger of the two rings. He pulled it from the piece of wood Hermione had stuck them to. She smiled fleetingly, putting her own onto her finger and pocketing a vial. Strengthening solution, he recognized at a glance. And only then did Severus understand what she'd meant when she'd said the ring would take him to the right moment in time if they were both wearing them. For her, it wouldn't even take a minute until he reappeared out of the rift. If he returned.
"Be safe, Severus," she said when he left.
Her voice was still ringing in his ears when he looked back at the shimmering surface of the time rift. He left the church and stepped into the pouring rain. The air was warm and humid. He turned up his collar before he apparated back to Hogwarts, and couldn't believe how wrong it felt to be here, even now, after only 3 days in another world. How much he longed to be back with her. That one night had indeed been a mistake. Albus didn't expect an explanation for his disappearance.
"Is there anything I need to know?"
he just asked. "No."
"Did it affect our efforts?"
"No."
"Do you plan to repeat it?"
Severus hesitated for a second. "No," he decided. He knew that he wouldn't be able to come back for a second time. If he were to go through the rift again, it would be final. His decision, however, already began to unravel the next day, when Albus told him what would be necessary to defeat the Dark Lord. Harry Potter had to die? Everything he'd been working for all these years would be in vain? He apparated back to Dole and shouted at the damn rift, as if Hermione could hear him on the other side. Why hadn't she told him anything about that? Why had she let him walk into this blindly? He'd even mentioned Harry Potter, and she'd said nothing. He almost threw the damn ring into the rift, but he stopped himself, pocketed it, bought a bottle of fire whiskey, and returned to Hogwarts to get as pissed as he could possibly get, even if only for one evening. Like hell he would return to Granger. If he survived the damn war, if he chose to survive it, returning to her was the last thing he would do, after she'd let him down like that. He threw the ring into a drawer and banged it shut. Seeing Hermione, Miss Granger, again, in her approximately 10 years younger version, however, put him off more than he was ready to admit. For the first lesson he returned to, still a bit hungover, the sober-up potion used to be better. She entered the classroom last, and he could barely take his eyes off of her. Off her round face, the bushy hair, her lips. Only when she met his eyes did he manage to look away. This time, he managed. She wasn't who he... Severus gulped. "Are you planning to stand here all day, Miss Granger?" he snarled, and she shook her head and hurried to get inside. But the more often his eyes brushed her, the less he could deny it. He longed for her. For the older Hermione that was waiting for him in a time 500 years ago, just because he'd asked her to. Who had given him a break and the strength he needed. And something of her he found even in this younger version. He found it in the evening he caught her outside of the common room after curfew. She'd clearly been angling for this meeting, and the curiosity of what had happened with him during this 1 week he'd disappeared was clearly blossoming inside of her already. That he'd stared at her before class hadn't made things better, and that he wanted her curiosity to blossom even further, that he only noticed when he heard himself say, "Be safe, Hermione." Because this was the evening that he had to kill Dumbledore, and seeing Hermione, he felt how much he needed something he could return to. He hadn't seen her for more than a year when he dragged himself into the church and collapsed onto one of the benches. He'd almost forgotten what she looked like, how her voice sounded, and how her lips had felt on his. And at the same time,
She'd been his fixed point. So much had happened during that year. So much that had cost him more strength than he'd believed he had. But no matter what had burst into flames around him, she had been there, the proof that they would win the war. Only 500 years away. He'd fished the ring back out of the drawer the moment he'd returned to Hogwarts as headmaster. He'd worn it ever since, hidden by a disillusionment charm, and twisted it on his finger whenever he had to remember what he was getting up for every morning, instead of ending his life and letting the wizarding world burn. And whenever he had to remember that she'd survived the war. When he'd left her to do what had needed to be done, he hadn't anticipated how afraid he would be for her all the time. How often he would wonder whether she'd really calculated correctly, whether she really hadn't been supposed to tell him more, whether he really wasn't supposed to intervene and help. And at the same time, he was glad that he hadn't known anything about what she'd had to do that year. Sneaking into the Ministry to steal a Horcrux from Dolores Umbridge, being tortured by Bellatrix Lestrange and only barely making it out alive because of the help of a house elf, invading Gringotts and breaking into said Bellatrix Lestrange's vault, only to escape on the back of a dragon. He would have instantly burned down every single one of those buildings, the Ministry, Malfoy Manor, and Gringotts, only to stop her. No, it had been better that he hadn't known anything, that he'd only known that they would somehow make it. In hindsight, Severus wasn't sure when exactly he'd decided to go back to her. He'd already sent his notebook and placed the books regarding time rifts during the summer break. He couldn't be absolutely positive that he would have been able to kill Dumbledore if he hadn't had these few days with Hermione in the past. But that he would return, he really didn't know when he'd made that decision. When he'd forgiven her for not telling him about Potter's death. Was the boy already dead? Was the war already over? Had there been anyone to kill the Dark Lord? He didn't stay to find out. Hermione hadn't said that he would need to do anything more than survive. All of them believed him dead. There had been nothing else for him to do, except to think of himself for once, after all these years. And that he had done. He'd cast the charm when the Dark Lord had ordered him into the Shrieking Shack, had trusted Potter to really be there so he would be able to tell him what he needed to know. And he'd had the chance to lay eyes on this Hermione for the last time, to see that she'd really survived all of what had happened to her, before he'd closed his eyes, waiting until he was alone. Maybe he'd even been unconscious for a second. He couldn't remember clearly. But Hermione's potion was as effective as she'd promised. The wounds on his neck were barely breathing because his heart was only beating about 20 times a minute. He'd bandaged them up, and the blood-replenishing part of the antidote had been enough for him to apparate to the old church. Now he raised his tired eyes and blinked until he could clearly see the shimmering rift. The distance, about 20 feet, seemed endless. But after a few minutes he scoffed. After all that he'd done in the last year, he had better be able to walk this laughable distance to travel back 500 years, to go back to the moment at which he'd said goodbye to a woman who he would kiss or strangle when he was with her again. He hadn't made up his mind yet. So he struggled to his feet and stumbled through the nave, his legs trembling. He supported himself on the benches left and right until he had to make the last steps on his own. And he did. While he was in the rift, he felt the power of the ring on his finger unfurling. The rift wanted to toss him in one direction, but the ring pulled him in a completely different one. It was like traveling with a portkey, only harsher. At long last, he tumbled to the ground face first, groaned, and simply gave up. After everything that he'd been through this night, he'd now officially reached his limit. But she was there and turned him around, placed his head in her lap, and administered to him the potion that she'd taken with her when he'd left, while she said, "You returned. You're here. And you're alive. Thank Merlin, you're alive." Only the strengthening solution made it into his mind, though, not what she was saying. But it provided him with enough strength to open his eyes, just as Hermione clicked her tongue. "I should have brought Dittany, and more blood-replenishing potion. How could I—" He reached for her hand. "Shut up," he croaked. The thrice-damned snake had probably hurt his vocal cords. She snuffled. "Okay." Brushing some tears from her cheek, she looked him in the eyes, exactly what he needed and wanted right now. Her, her face, the chirping of the birds, the rustling of the wind in the leaves, and the certainty that he would never have to return to war ever again. That he was allowed to stay. This time, forever.
ETL Echo. Echoing tales for everyone to love.